And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Declare your independence from here in Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAU T-Full Studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. This is what we're going to do today. Cody Wilson and Bruce Fenton are both running for the Bitcoin Foundation's board. Now, we have, I'll give you a little introduction real quick of each of them. Maybe you might even get into opening statements here in the first segment. What I'm going to do, we have no plan other than everybody gets to have their say. You know, even I'll be kind of quiet, you know, and we'll just listen to Cody and Bruce. Now, the 3 minutes is the only thing that I wanted from them, to give them the opportunity uninterrupted just to give their spiel. You know, I am here because... My concern has always been very simple. Bitcoin represents the people's currency. It's people to people. Boom, done. Okay? Does it need to have some kind of sanction or legitimacy from a central authority? Is that the world that we live in? Is it technology that can finally start to free us? I mean, just today, you go to freedomsphoenix.com and you see new email services, new storage services, new video, instant messaging. So everything is going peer-to-peer, encrypted, distributed, and leave me aloneist. So I'm just wondering, the one thing that I believe that represented how possible this was and how we can free humanity from the clutches of Bitcoin, man, it definitely sparked the imagination. But as can be expected, immediately there are forces that would like to help it, control it, maneuver it. I don't know what the Bitcoin Foundation is in relation to that. Are they a servant of the people? Or not? Well, we're going to find out. And the two people to be having this open, non-aggressive, I mean, assertive, you know, but we're just going to learn. Everybody gets to have their say. I want to ask a bunch of questions. Many of you have known I've been covering Bitcoin since, God, it was 9, 10, bought my first ones when they were $3 and something, you know, a Casatius coin at 4. So I've been around for a while, but I've been looking for the grandma just button. You know, it's all a lot of people that are intellectually technically able to be anonymous. Well, can everyone else? Should we be able to pursue that? And does the government want to allow it? Can they stop it? These are the things that are going to be discussed as time goes on and of great concern to me and the future of my family. As we start doing Bitcoin and we start looking at it, is it a long-term investment or is it just a silver moving process? So I'm going, okay, we're going to find out. We're going to just ask the questions of the individuals that know. Let's go ahead and do a little bit on Bruce Fenton. I give you his bio here. Bruce Fenton is the president of the Bitcoin Association, bitcoinassociation.org. It's an industry group focused on education and advocacy for Bitcoin and related technologies with individuals, businesses, charities, and governments. He is also a lifetime member of the Bitcoin Foundation and active in other industry organizations. Bruce is also founder and managing director of Atlantic Financial, which in 1994 became the first full-service investment firm to use the internet. For over 22 years, Bruce has focused on emerging markets and emerging technologies and has completed over $4.5 billion in investment sales. Bruce spends about half the year traveling internationally to locations such as Asia and the Middle East and serves as an advisor to large organizations. Bruce has been quoted in the New York Times, Bloomberg, Investor's Business Daily, Fortune Magazine, many other publications, and is an active speaker at Bitcoin and related conferences. Okay. Let's go ahead and talk about Mr. Cody Wilson. Here I have, right next to my heart, there we go. Cody Wilson, anarchist activist Cody Wilson has officially launched his candidacy for the upcoming Bitcoin Foundation board elections and reaffirmed his intention to try and disband the organization from within if successful. Now, we've known Cody Wilson for some time. Cody is an anarchist. He is a very simple leave me aloneist and see, but he's a big advocate of Bitcoin, and he's done a lot to educate us on that. So let's go ahead. I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and start with Cody and go ahead and give you your 3-minute opening, and welcome to the show, Cody.
Hey, thanks, Ernie. Happy to be here. Look, man, it doesn't come down to a 3-minute opening. Maybe I'll keep it to 2. The Bitcoin Foundation was organized by Charlie Shrem, as I understand it, a young idealist about my age who thought that libertarian principles are enough. If we just organize a bunch of the early entrepreneurs in Bitcoin and have something like an open source mentality, we can create our own industrial lobby. We can appeal to the government for benefits when we can get benefits, and we can ward off bad regulation when we see it coming down the pike, if only we organize in a discernible way that this system is used to finding us organized. That didn't work out very well, and basically the track record of this Bitcoin Foundation is just a series of not unfortunate events, but kind of predetermined, laughable catastrophes that most people with a modicum of libertarian conditioning could have seen coming a mile away. I won't bore you with every single one of them, but it instantiated a Bitcoin priesthood, which rather than introduce democratic principles to code maintenance and deployability, basically just kept hierarchy into the creation of Bitcoin. Basically, the story of the BitLicense is from beginning to end engineered by, foreseen by the Bitcoin Foundation. Charlie Shrem gave Ben Lasky and company in the New York DFS every single article of information they needed to know about regulating Bitcoin and introducing the first national, but certainly not the last, national licensing regime for doing Bitcoin work in the United States. But look, I don't want to just penalize the Bitcoin Foundation for its history. What I'm trying to do now that this board election seat has come open is offer the libertarian Bitcoin a chance at, if not his own personal redemption, a kind of ritual opportunity to clear the way of this troubled organization, which admits itself that it failed in its ambitions to develop policy goals, set itself on the right footing, and now only wants the political goodwill to just dedicate itself to code maintenance. And what we'd like to do is clear the way for a truly open standard organization with an open documentary process, which allows participation of all individuals all over the world, just like the Internet Engineering Task Force or other core standard developing bodies that have built the architecture of the free Internet. We don't want some kind of ERSOC, ISOC or IETF organization. We want to get rid of this organization. For the first time, I believe, you know, libertarians always fantasize about some politician coming around and offering them the chance to bring the whole thing down. You know, I get to vote for Pepsi or Coke in this system. I never get to vote to tear the whole thing down. Well, here I am standing to offer the libertarian a chance to tear the whole Bitcoin Foundation down. That's my pitch.
Thank you, Cody Wilson. This is, you know, Bruce, we're kind of tight on time. I do want to, we'll give you your 3 minutes right when we come back. But I do want you to say hello. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks. Thanks very much for having me.
Bruce, the one thing I'm being involved before we go, I looked at, you know, I'm sure it's there, but I looked for a couple of days and I couldn't find a lot of the rules on this election. And the big thing I'm looking at is, when is it? You know, it's soon. What's the date by which the members will vote?
It's February 13, 14, and 15.
All right, February 14, 15. Members will vote. Go to the Bitcoin Foundation to search it, pop it up there. Go take a look, and maybe you can find it. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence. Start right off with Bruce Fenton's opening statement. We'll be right back.
This is Charles Goyette, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Dollar Meltdown, so you can learn.
Yeah, Bruce, help me out. We're still recording. But I go to the Bitcoin Foundation page. I looked at elections, criteria, how it's not. I mean, it wasn't very easy to navigate. Can you tell me where to go to get a lot of the details like that?
Yeah, I agree. It's difficult to navigate. There's not a lot of clarity on it. I found it on one of the election threads. I just saw that the other day. I was curious myself because I had some things coming up. So I'm kind of, you know, as a candidate, I'm wondering when the election is.
I'm hip. I mean, you know, there's things you got to do. You know, it's like how many gazillion members do we want to register? You know, I've been doing politics for a long time. I already know how this goes. But I'm looking for, you know, it says governance and elections, you know, at the bottom. So I click on that and I go, okay, so give me some governance and elections. Let's see. It gives a timeline that you can kind of move, and I move it to 2015, and there's nothing there.
Yeah.
You know, it's just open. So I'm, I don't know what to say. I mean, how do I find this?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't. I'm with you. I'm in the same boat as you. You know, I'm not the website designer. I wish it was more clear. The way I found it was I just happened to be browsing in the forum discussion section. There's candidate threads, and it was in one of those threads that it was mentioned.
Okay. Now, the one thing we'll get into that I just want you to be prepared is that I'm looking at the election process itself, who is eligible to vote. I would imagine it would be members. Now, if you have a controversial effort such as this, you might have, you know, swarms of people on both sides registering, and then they, you know, they make a bunch of money and it doesn't matter, you know. So I'm going, okay, so I'm looking at the participation deadlines for people to register to be able to vote. Should they even care about it now? I mean, do you know that answer?
I think it's February 6th.
Okay, February 6th. All right. We'll go ahead and be back in just a couple minutes, and then we'll get right to you, okay?
Sounds good.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm here, Ernest Hancock. A discussion between prospective board members of the Bitcoin Foundation, Cody Wilson and Bruce Fenton. We're going to now hear from Bruce Fenton, give a few minutes to express himself and why he desires your vote. Well, we found out we're still trying to get some details. Hopefully by the end of the show we'll get something in print and a link that we can put up. But I think you have until Bruce was telling us February 6th to be able to register as a member of the Bitcoin Foundation. So then you get a vote, you know, for well, really it's to disband it if you vote for Cody Wilson. And Bruce Fenton will explain what his candidacy is in support of. And then we have the election in mid-February. It's going to be a Valentine's Day massacre for somebody for something. We're going to find out what. Let's go ahead. Bruce, please introduce yourself. Say hello. And go ahead and give us your three-minute opening, would you please?
Sure. Hi. Yeah, thanks. I think that the foundation is not beyond hope. I agree with a lot of the things that Cody and other critics of the foundation have said. Clearly, there's been some ridiculous things that have happened, embarrassing things that the foundation has done, and things that a lot of members do not feel represent them or the community. And I think those things can be improved on, no question about it. I don't see it as being beyond hope where it would be necessarily wise to scrap the entire thing at this stage. I think we can move more towards an organization that would be an effective tool. And I also don't know how realistic it is to destroy it with one board member. It's not It's not something that is easy for one board member to do. I think it would still exist. So I'd rather see it be a productive and useful tool. And I think our community is small right now. We need all the help we can get unless something is actively against us. I think it's better to spend the efforts trying to fix it and build things. I'd rather, if I'm going to fight something, I'd rather spend the efforts fighting people like Ben Lasky and fighting, outright enemies of the space, and try to make the foundation be a useful and productive tool to us all.
Okay, we can start there. Let's go ahead and ask you a comment. Does Bitcoin need the foundation to exist?
No, I don't think so. I agree. We don't need somebody to sanction its legitimacy of Bitcoin. There's a lot of things we don't need in this world, but it doesn't mean they're necessarily bad things. There's a lot of good things. Brave New Books. You're a fan of this bookstore. Someone could say, we don't need a bookstore. We don't need centralization. Well, yeah, that's true. We don't need a bookstore, and we don't need a centralized organization. We could say, hey, we can just put all these books and everybody can independently grab them. It sounds great, but why not? The bookstore does good. It even though it's a central organization, it does good things. So I would like to see the foundation. Yeah, you could definitely make an argument that we don't need it, but I think we can make it a tool that makes it better than not having it. And that's why I'm running.
Okay. Cody, respond to that. We need it as a tool to what?
Yeah, like I hear a couple things, and maybe this is where we begin to draw some distinctions. So one of the arguments here is that, well, the Bitcoin space could use a tool, or the Bitcoin space could use an organization to advocate on its behalf. The Bitcoin Foundation is an organization, therefore we could use the Bitcoin Foundation. Well, in the most general sense, this is true, but the Bitcoin Foundation has a multi-year record now of total abreaction, capitulation. I mean, it's the most heinous kind of, I believe that we should actually look at its record. And Bruce comes in and says, well, I'm fundamentally reformist in character. It would be more practical and more realistic to reform this organization. So he's saying, basically, like, well, we can make some good on this. And a lot of people believe that that's true. Now, a lot of libertarians also believe, and have been trying for probably as long as they've been alive, at least in their political life, to reform this greater political system in which they're involved. It's not that realistic a proposition in the end. And especially as organized, the Bitcoin Foundation is an industrial lobby that only half of the individual members of the space can ever represent at any one time. So as organized, as enfranchised, I believe it's fatally flawed to ever be an effective, quote-unquote, tool or organization to actually promote what we believe to be the communitarian and individual interests of a free and open Bitcoin. It's first and foremost an industrially-led lobby effort, which is fatally enfranchised.
That's one thing that really struck me is from the beginning, the promise to a lot of us that were heavily supporting the concepts behind Bitcoin, its anarchistic tendency. I mean, I don't think it was designed to be anything other than it works peer-to-peer. But as I read Satoshi's white paper just recently for the first time straight through, and I just go, wow, this is... It was pretty simple. Cody makes a big point of calling people out for not being libertarian enough. Is Bitcoin itself an anarchistic solution to state-controlled money, or should it be brought into the legacy system to be compatible?
Well, I think it is an anarchistic solution, and it ideally will work outside of all of the systems that we have. I view it as a point where we need a point and a method of doing that. If I could wake up one morning and I had a method that would change the whole world to anarchy, I'd do it. But other than talking, giving speeches, talking on Facebook or whatever, there's not a lot of clear paths that will do that. And so there is this reality of where we are in the world now. And I'm not saying that we should, deal with these organizations and give them more legitimacy. The organizations who are against Bitcoin, like Ben Lasky. I mean, I was very vocal about saying that we shouldn't engage him at all. I gave a lot of speeches on that. They have you know, some of the speeches have 100,000 views on YouTube, so they were pretty popular, where I said we shouldn't engage with this person at all because he's an enemy of Bitcoin. However, I think that there are some times when it can be beneficial to interact with existing systems, because there are systems that, you know, that's the way that they are used to working out, and without any interaction from a centralized organization or something like that, they just don't know how to interact, and I wish we could change them, but I don't know another way to do that other than interacting with them in a way that they understand, and hopefully stopping the next Losky from coming on.
Okay, I recall your presentation. It was during the 45-day thing. They said 45 days, you have the comment, which extended, and then they dumped whatever on us. And I recall your comments, and I applauded them. I'm going, yeah, heck yeah, man. Why are you even – if Bitcoin needs to worry about what somebody says or does, it's the wrong tech. I mean, I've been looking at that for years. I'm going, either it can survive on it, that was the point, you know, or we're trying to shoehorn it into the legacy system. And I go, I thought it was promised to, free us from that worldwide. Yeah, every individual on the planet. So I applauded that. And now I'm hearing, a little something different. When we go in, we're going to work with the government to make them good, not as bad. We're going to find out. Bruce Fenton gets to express himself when we come back. Also, go check the archive, because we're going to keep yakking a little bit during the archive. This will be up here forever and ever and always. Amen. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. We'll be right back.
Ross Ulbricht was arrested by the FBI.
Okay. Yeah, Bruce, we won't do it on air, of course, but you can understand. I remember that speech, and I'm going, right on. Why are we messing with these guys? Screw them. I thought that was the promise, the point. And now you're advocating that we have to or should, or it would be in the best interest of something or somebody. What is it you mean?
Well, there's a couple different kinds of regulators. There's, corrupt, lying opportunists like Ben Losky, and there are actually regulators that mean well. And I think that if it's genuinely a question of lack of understanding about the technology, where a regulator just honestly doesn't understand what the technology is or how it works, or hasn't considered technical solutions to the things that they view as problems, I don't see a problem in engaging with a regulator to explain that to them.
Well, what would they see technically as a problem, not being able to track it? I mean, that's the first thing I got out of Ben. I mean,
I'll give you an example. I met with the Massachusetts regulators, and they said, and I said, hey, look, you shouldn't regulate it all, blah, blah, blah. And they said, well, put yourself in our position. We exist. And if a Mt. Gox happens on our watch, we're going to have, elderly people and people who've lost their life savings coming to us and saying, why didn't you stop this? So we feel that we as regulators feel that we should have proof of reserves. And my reply to that was, well, why don't you encourage technical solutions to that, or better yet, allow the marketplace to have technical solutions that have proof of reserve, so that you don't need to do it with guns and violence, educating them about what is out there and, making it so that they don't, hopefully mess with us.
Yeah, I tell you one thing. We'll get to Cody here in a second. But I tell you, if we're having regulators, it's their job to explain it to the public, what Bitcoin is and how to use it and where and to and not. They don't give you friendly advice. They just tell you what you can and can't do. And it's to their advantage. From what you've been hearing, Cody, you have any comment?
I think keep circling back to what's pragmatic, what's realistic. Well, they're actually existing regulators, and we should understand them and their personality. Look, I mean, when we get back on the air, let's bring back the realistic point again. I mean, it's the easiest thing in the world if Bruce and I get elected together, find a quorum of five people, majority of three, disband a foundation, take Gavin's plan to do a BETF and actually make something that's intelligible to us instead of regulators. It's not unfathomable that we can actually create a standards body like the things that built the internet or like the bodies that built, email. I mean, there's actually ways to do this, precursors that are, have a multi-generational at this point history that aren't as corrupt and thoroughly kind of hobbled from the beginning as this organization. Don't just capitulate right now and just say, well, look, does the foundationalist work from within a reform system? We know how well that works. Let's at least reset the table on our own terms.
Bruce?
Yeah, I think I understand a lot of what you're saying, Cody, but I think I don't see the foundation as this huge. I don't see it like I totally agree with you with libertarians banging their head against the wall by voting with alphabet letter R or alphabet letter D. I get that, but I don't see the foundation that way. It's not this huge, giant, monolithic massive system with tons and tons of bad actors. It's a half a dozen people. It's a couple employees and a board that three or four out of five members are brand new.
Okay, let's go ahead and bring that in. Here we go.
Sure.
Listen to LRN.FM on any phone, anytime. 213-493-0309. That's 213-493-0309.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Mid-February, there is an election. There is an election to the board of the Bitcoin Foundation. And Cody Wilson, and I believe October, November, had announced that he was going to run for the board under the platform to disband it, to eliminate it, to make it go away. And I'm wondering about its creation. There was a lot of controversy and throughout its history. But I want to ask Bruce Fenton, how did it get to the point to where the people at the core development of Bitcoin came on the payroll of the Bitcoin Foundation? I mean, that was of concern to me. And I'm like, whoa. The golden rule kind of thing. So I'm just, who's paying core developers? Who gets selected to get paid? And why did that come about? Explain that for me, will you please?
That's pretty early on. I mean, a lot of people thought that was one of the original reasons to have the foundation was so that that it would pay salaries of core developers. I don't know a lot of these answers to these early things. I wasn't involved in the foundation at the time, and a lot of it. I mean, one of the big complaints about the foundation ongoing has been a lack of transparency about not so much how it was created. I think that's more internet history, and I think it was at least partly created because of people's desires to pay Gavin at the time. As far as what it's doing now, I know there's a few paid developers.
One of the other things in the beginning, we'll get to that later. Cody, do you have any information on that, on how Bitcoin Foundation became the patrons or of the individuals doing the work?
Look, it was all organic, man. And that's just how it happened. And like Bruce said, that's actually one of the only moral justifications left for the foundation, the idea that it should pay for core development. When you go to Reddit now, when you hear people kind of pushing back against like the idea of my candidacy, pretty much everyone in the Bitcoin space agrees that it's time to look past talking to regulators, but we still need the foundation because we have to pay for core development, and these people are afraid that money, if you don't have it dedicated, or if you don't pay our superstar chief scientist or his other helpers, so basically that's why it continues to exist now.
So is that a seem like a main concern to you, Bruce, is that as you continue forward, is that the developers get paid? Is that as the top on the list?
Yeah, I think that's a valid concern, and I agree with Cody that is something that people use to justify the foundation. I'm a little bit different than some candidates. I think that I'm not a favor of lobbying. Foundation had done some lobbying efforts, which are not really transparent. We don't really know what they are. I don't support that, but there are a lot of people who believe it should be only core development. I actually think it's okay, as we discussed on the break, I think it's okay to discuss with regulators. I'm absolutely against regulation, but there are cases where regulators can be educated, where it really is genuinely a fundamental lack of understanding about what the technology is or how it works. And if we can, in a way that doesn't cost a lot of money or resources, if we can communicate with regulators in a way that's productive, and I've had productive conversations with regulators several times, I think that is something that can be useful for a centralized organization and useful for.
You know, let's talk about this regulator thing, Bruce. I'm useful to talk to regulators. See, you get perfectly supportive regulator, fully informed, able to explain themselves and the technology to businesses and individuals and politicians. He's your greatest, you know, friend. And I'm wondering the source of his power, the state behind the regulator, if they would be as consistent. Is their goal to incorporate Bitcoin as a competitor, incorporate the Bitcoin as part of the legacy system, or to either control it or its ultimate demise? I'm just wondering what the core justification for a regulator's existence. I mean, and to say that it's to benefit the people, we haven't seen that yet. You know,
well, we're looking at it through an American lens. I'm an American, but I spent half of my year traveling outside this country. I mean, our regulators they do tend to be corrupt, lying, dishonest, career climbing, ambitionist people like Ben Lasky, but that's not the way it is all over the world. In some places of the world, they're actually worse, believe it or not. They chop your head off. And in other places in the world, believe it or not, there are actually regulators who really do view their job as protecting the public. And they don't have all of these issues with, you know, kind of climbing the ladder and political opportunism and deceit that you see with somebody like Lasky. So there are regulators. I've talked to regulators in Dubai, and there's regulators in places like Singapore and other places where they really just do care. They say, wow, what is this new technology? I heard it's very horrible and terrible for people. What's the deal? And I say, no, it's not horrible. Here's why. Here's how it works. And they say things like, well, how do I know somebody isn't going to hack the code and make 22 million coins instead of 21 million coins? And I explain what a ledger is, a public ledger that's distributed, and you can actually talk some sense into some of these people. It's rarer in the United States. I think that there are some that are like that, but most of them, unfortunately, are like Lasky. So I think we ought to look at it through the lens of, you know, this is a global phenomenon, a global foundation. I don't like any regulators, but there are definitely different degrees of how bad they are.
Are there good regulators, Cody?
Look, man, wow. So look, I don't really want to get bogged down in libertarian philosophy here. I believe, I'll just have to take it as an article of faith, that a healthy amount of people in the Bitcoin community aren't really interested right now in comedy and conversations with regulators about how Bitcoin works. Surely some other organization can do that. And maybe like all I want to get to is just some coherence in our direction and purpose here. I believe the Bitcoin Foundation itself has given up regulatory education as one of its goals. I would like to give up the Bitcoin Foundation for reasons beyond, well, maybe there are some good regulators and some bad regulators. Let's just be honest. The U.S. system is going to be a system of statewide and national licensing regimes, AMLs, Know Your Customer regulatory creep. In Europe, there's the EU Payment Services Directive, and of course, Juncker's new digital single market, where they want to create one perfect homogenous digital space to cover the Eurozone, which will completely regulate all digital activities. I mean, this will completely harmonize in the West what the policy response to Bitcoin will be in most of the world. It's not a happy, fun thing that's on the way, and I think most people understand that the tide is against them when it comes to just regulatory creep. So whether some regulators dislike the way things are going or not really is immaterial to the idea that we have a completely incoherently organized apparatus for developing Bitcoin, which, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, is the first people's currency to actually be free of some of these things in political economy. So I'd like to move past whether there are good, bad regulators. It doesn't matter to me. I'd like to talk about how all we're talking about right now is just re-justification of the state form to get its tendrils around Bitcoin.
You know, I have a Electronic Frontier Foundation article that security is not a crime unless you're an anarchist. There's a judge in Spain stated that the use of encrypted email services, he believes, are associated with terrorism. And that is the one, the encryption of Bitcoin that allows for peer-to-peer transfers of value. You know, they're going, you're a secret, you're money launderers, you're terrorists, drug dealers, child pornographers. It's all this must be controlled and seen. I don't think regulators or the government is going to ever abandon the concept, which Bitcoin, with a couple of tweaks, would make it very easy to see everything, you know, from the people using it. You do have that contribution retribution for people that, like, donate to antiwar.com or other causes or Levolutions or whatever, and they go, yeah, we know where this came from, where this went. You know, are they going to give that up? Are we going to be able to lobby regulators that, you don't need that information? I'm Bruce Fenton. Help us out when we come back and explain how we can turn regulators into advocates. Is that possible? Advocates of what? We'll be right back.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
Okay, one thing I'm looking at here on the Bitcoin Foundation to become a member, you know, correct me if this is still true. The last I could see is July 23rd, 12. Founding members are 10 Bitcoin. Industry members, 500 Bitcoin per year. Industry members, gold, 2,500. Platinum, 10,000. And this is per year.
No, a lot of stuff's old, man.
Well, what is it now? How do you become...
You can't become a founding member anymore. Just go to bitcoinfoundation.org now and go to join. They show you the different classes of membership.
Okay. Yeah, this was my experience. It was not as easy as I anticipated. Okay, I'm going to bitcoinfoundation.org and then where? Join?
Join, yeah.
Okay, join, submit your email, individual service.
They've redenominated everything.
Okay, yeah. $25 a year.
Or a lifetime at $250 for individuals. Then there's the industry levels.
Okay, so that's not as stupid. All right.
But now here's the point, and bring this back up when we're back from break. I mean, for the people's currency, right, the first truly, you know, quote-unquote democratic money, and
they
all pay lip service.
Dollars,
idea.
I see, yeah.
No. What I'm saying is you got to be a member if you want to try to influence the direction of how they develop the core repository. Well, that's not been the case for any other core system. Core architectural system like this before, which basically is, you know, an internet-wide protocol. Why should you have to become a member?
See, that's one thing, Bruce, that I'll kind of focus on, is that if you're going to have a disruptive thing like this, you know, it's a peer-to-peer, it's a people's currency, it doesn't need any, you know, the rush to create an organization that then immediately starts negotiating with regulators and government, it just seemed weird. You know, so I'm wondering, as we go in and we continue the conversation, being inside, if there was a disillusionment, an abandonment, you know, how would that happen? How many board members are there? Five, you said?
Yeah.
No, there's more than that. It's just quorum can be five.
Oh, how many are there?
It's always been up and down because they keep losing seats. So right now they've got basically two empty seats, maybe three if you count the industry open spot. Gavin's leaving, so it's, you know, if this election doesn't go well, I don't know. You've got somewhere between 5 to 8 of these board members at any given time.
See, my problem is, I'm like, you know, what difference does it make? I mean, I understand the advocacy and this discussion and pointed out, but, you know, if Bitcoin is dependent on this election, it's the wrong tech. I mean, you know, that's kind of my position. All right, here we go. We'll come back.
We just can't have people floating about unregulated, you know.
You can interact with other LRN listeners in our message board at forum.lrn.fm. That's forum.lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies.
Yeah, breaking free from the lies. The lies, the lies. Okay. To be a member, to be able to vote, it's changed. You know, it's gone down from in the past. It was, you know, portions of Bitcoin. I mean, I'm looking at here is 10,000 Bitcoin a year to be an industry platinum member. I'm going, dang. You know, founding member, 10 Bitcoin individual members, 2.5 Bitcoin a year. I'm going, man, that had to get expensive. I mean, this is getting to where, oh, heck no, man. You guys are on your own. Let me know how it works out. But come to find out, let's take a look at the screen here. The individual supporters, the annual per year, $25, lifetime $250. Then you have industry supporters, you know, it's $1,000, $5,000, $10,000, $25,000 annually. And I'm wondering, this kind of money that goes in industry, which I'm imagining there's quite a few. If you're going in the industry, you're going to be supporting. And I'm wondering what kind of influence this has, if any. You know, or is it the election that has more influence? I'm wondering who makes decisions. Bruce, would you help me out with that? You know, are they looking at spreadsheets and see whose interest needs? I don't know how Bitcoin Foundation works. What's its influences?
I'm not sure what your question is.
Money. I mean, you got people put in here $25,000 a year just to be, you know, an industry supporter at the top level of I love you. And I'm wondering, you know, okay, what does that buy them?
Yeah, I think we need more transparency. And I don't know what it buys them other than what it says on the membership sheet as far as, you know, platinum member, gold member, whatever. I think I'm not sure I quite understand your question, but I think you're also asking, you know, kind of where the money goes. And I think we need, you know, more transparency on that. There's a lot of speculation that the Bitcoin Foundation has tons of money sitting around. And I don't think that's the case because, you know, if nothing else, because of the amount that they've spent, which at the annual meeting in Amsterdam, they indicated was quite a bit. And those, you know, that meeting is one of the ones that is public.
Spend it on what? I mean, towards what? See, I don't really care. The accounting, I'm like, if you give money, that's your problem, not mine. I'm not a member. I don't care. You know, but I just the fact that there is, you know, substantial amounts of money going in and being spent, I'm going, OK, well, this transparency thing, that was the whole point of Bitcoin, was its capability of being transparent. I give billions of dollars to the Red Cross after a 9/11 event. And then the people that was raised as a promise to raise it for, they have to sue to get the money. So I'm going, this technology allows for, I put it in here, I see it there, it went there, it goes, a lot easier auditing. So I'm just wondering, the Bitcoin Foundation itself, you would think would emulate that trait, you know, and I'm just, if you get elected, I mean, are you going to be advocating for opening up all these agreements and where the money went and for whom and why?
Yeah, I've already said that. I think that there should be a lot more transparency. There are certain things like you know, personal employees, like their personal salary in certain cases, particularly more junior employees. And, you know, sometimes there are cases where employers will have health issues if an employee is raped or has drug rehab or something where the employer will pay that. I think certain things like that should be confidential. But all of the main expenses, you know, the salaries of the top, level employees, executives, that the, you know, certainly expenditures on things like lobbying, I would want to see where those, you know, where those costs are going, how much, I mean, who did we pay for lobbying? Who did we pay? How much was it? What did we get for that? What is their belief? I mean, those are clear questions that absolutely we should have more transparency on.
What's your thoughts on this issue, Cody?
So I feel like when it comes to transparency, and listen, for all those listening at home, this is the Bitcoin Foundation's perhaps single biggest problem. We can talk about reforming it, but literally no one knows its finances. Literally no one knows its history of communications with governments, regulators, lobbyists. We literally don't know. And even those documents it proposes that it will reveal to us, like its minutes and its meetings, can't be shown by its secretary. We have literally no idea what's going on. Its mailing lists are private. Its development processes are private. Even the Bitcoin improvement proposal process, to a degree, is insulated from truly public review. So my what I want to add when it comes to transparency is, no, I don't want to know what you're doing with your employees. I don't want a foundation at all. I want to strike it. I want to strike everything and just have an open document standard process like these other protocol organizations where we all know how documents are produced. We all see every communication about how we do BIP. Every change can be scrutinized, proposed. Any individual can participate. All the developer mailing lists are open to the public. We know what's happening, and there's not a private stewardship of the direction of the code, which, as you suggested earlier, Ernie, might be influenced by private interests who can perhaps steer the foundation with, you know, more gravity in their, you know, in their donations.
You know, this is one thing, Cody, I want to ask you this. You know, we had talked a lot. I mean, you've been involved in a lot of different things, but there's kind of been a common theme. And the theme, you know, in my estimation, has been, you know, down to the individual, leave me aloneist kind of thing. And I was really interested when Bitcoin first started to have any kind of traction at all, that there was such a sprint to create a foundation that immediately started negotiating with governments that I thought Bitcoin was meant to at least ignore. So are these people, they were just naive, or they didn't understand, or they had back? I mean, what was the organization's genesis?
Charlie Shrim put it all together in a cafe, basically, right? And he brought all the founding members together. Now, he will tell you now, right before he's about to go to prison, he'll tell you now that he regrets how he organized it, what happened to it. You know, it's the same story all the time, right? All these founders always regret how these things end up becoming. And I want to be clear. I'm not saying the foundation is some titanic, you know, it's in no way comparable to the United States government. It doesn't need to be thought of or treated in the same way. I don't mean by this kind of aggression or ire I have for it to somehow portray it as some overwhelming organization. I just mean that it's so contrary to the ideas of a libertarian stewardship of a libertarian currency that it's outrageous. And if you're not somewhat outraged as a libertarian in Bitcoin that they've gotten away with all this, you've got a real problem. And to a degree here, I don't mean to be personal about this at all, but you know, if what Mr. Fenton is talking about is a kind of anti-statism, because I know he likes to represent himself as anti-state, well, we're in trouble, folks, because that kind of comfort with the state form ain't going to get us very far. So if we can't have a serious conversation about wiping the table away of an organization like this, which its founders now admit to be totally founded in error and completely unprepared for what was coming down the pike, well, then look, we're in a whole lot of trouble.
Okay, let's ask Bruce. Bruce, help me out with you're elected. You come in, you're influential individual, you're very articulate, you can have a lot of influence on fellow board members and so on. To what? I mean, how would you answer Cody's concerns and make it palatable to people that were looking for the promise of Bitcoin? How can you assuage your fears?
Well, I think that there are definitely, you know, we have to recognize there are interests that that are very statist. They want to see Bitcoin regulation. They still think that the way, and I way early on, I mean, you could probably find Reddit comments and things like that. I think I wrote a whole long piece on Reddit way early when most people in the industry were, you know, praising Ben Lasky. Remember before he came out with his proposal, most people were saying, wow, this guy's great. He does AMAs and I warned people way back when it wasn't fashionable to do so, when there was very few people who were saying that. I warned people that you can't trust regulators and that these guys are not our friends and they're not on our side. And I shared experiences from my own, you know, experience from being a regulated person. There are still people who think that way. There are still a lot of people who think that way. So one thing that I would do if elected is try to communicate with them in a way that gets them to see that that is not something that makes sense. It is that these guys are not our friends. That we should stand against them and fight against them because you can't trust the regulators and they don't have our interests at heart in most cases.
You know, my concern is that government force always is focused where they think it would do the most good. And the benefit of Bitcoin was that there was nothing to focus on. It was distributed. And now we're creating a target. And I'm wondering if it just affects us as individuals, just affects industry, affects the technology. Will the technology be altered, you know, to be able to comply with the interest of they, them, those that won't leave us alone? Lots of questions, you know, lots of things. We, you know, by the end of this show, we may have a path that we well, not all of us, but a lot of us can agree that might be the way that we get our way out of this. Will we? I hope not. There's always contrary positions, but we're going to make sure everybody gets to have their say, and I'll be asking all the questions I've been sent. A lot of people have concerns along with mine. We'll be right back here next hour, 6 after the hour, on Declare Your Independence here on LRN and N3 Network. We'll be right back.
Why did you?
Okay, we got 6 minutes. I'm going to go ahead and let the news go. We'll be back right at the 6 minutes after, and we'll just get right to it, okay?
Okay, Sounds good. Packing up, but I'll be back.
All right.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
This is the Liberty Beat, your daily source for Liberty news and activist updates, online at thelibertybeat.com. I'm Brian Hagan with your Liberty Beat for Monday, January 19, 2015. Gold is trading at $1,280, silver at $17.80, and Bitcoin is trading around $210. Today's metal price is brought to you by Midas Resources Incorporated, helping clients convert their paper 401ks and IRAs to solid gold and silver. Get their 10 Reasons book free by calling 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237. How much food is in your pantry right now? Could you feed your family for 2 weeks? 1 week? Could you feed them for even 3 days without any help? Keeping an emergency food storage kit is the most effective way to begin to ensure your family's well-being during an emergency. eFoods Direct is food security for whatever the future holds. Go to eFoodsDirect.com/LibertyBeat or call 800-620-5520 to learn more about food security in a time of crisis. In the news, 4 years before the White House blamed North Korea for a cyber attack on Sony, the U.S. government was reportedly hacking the country's computer system. In 2010, the National Security Agency began the operation, according to the New York Times, in a report published Sunday, which cites newly disclosed NSA documents. The NSA was able to infiltrate many of the computers and networks used by North Korean hackers, and provided evidence that Kim Jong-un's computer wizards were behind the hack of Sony's email system, sources told the Times. The evidence gathered by the software hidden to monitor North Korea's activities proved critical in persuading President Obama to accuse the government of Kim Jong-un of ordering the Sony attack. The controversial transatlantic trade and investment partnership has faced resistance from critics who say the deal would allow multinational corporations to override national laws that protect the environment, consumer rights, and food standards. The so-called investor-to-state dispute settlement has been suspended after 150,000 objections in a European Union consultation exercise. The ISDS would protect foreign investors from decisions by national governments. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, another international trade deal, has also faced heavy scrutiny from the public. The Justice Department will not consider proposals to spare the life of Shokhar Tsarnaev, one of the alleged bombers of the Boston Marathon. That's according to a report from the Associated Press. The trial to decide what punishment Tsarnaev should face will begin in late January. Today's broadcast of the Liberty Beat is sponsored by My Magic Mud, detoxifying tooth powder, the most effective and affordable dental care around. Get a 150 application jar at MyMagicMud.com. Want to reach tens of thousands of like-minded listeners every day with your messenger product? The Liberty Beat is looking for sponsors for their daily news service. Support this grassroots media project while expanding your reach to a targeted market. To find out more, go to thelibertybeat.com/advertise. This is the Liberty Beat for Monday, January 19, 2015. Check out the website at thelibertybeat.com. On January 12th, Swiss authorities seized an automated bot called the Random Darknet Shopper, which was programmed to buy products from the Agora marketplace on the deep web. The bot was part of an art exhibit in Switzerland, exploring the implications of robots breaking the law by purchasing from the deep web. The Darknet Shopper spent $100 in bitcoins per week, purchasing counterfeit jeans, ecstasy pills, Nike sneakers, cigarettes, and the entire Lord of the Rings series of novels. Agora and other sites on the deep web can only be accessed by special browsers such as Tor. During his State of the Union speech on Tuesday, President Obama will announce a plan to close tax loopholes. The White House says Obama will call for an end to certain loopholes on trust funds, increases in the top tax rates on dividends and capital gains, and impose new fees on financial firms that borrow heavily. Other changes include requiring businesses to automatically enroll employees into individual retirement accounts. The White House proposal would also include tax breaks for families with two working members, child care, and paying college tuition. The Liberty Beat is made possible with the help of Central Texas Gun Works, your online source for firearms, firearm accessories, and ammunition. They take major credit cards and now accept Bitcoin. Visit them online at shop.centraltexasgunworks.com. Support also comes from the Conscious Resistance Network. Videos, news reports, and articles from a spiritual anarchist perspective. Experience the Conscious Resistance at theconsciousresistance.com. This is the Liberty Beat for Monday, January 19th, 2015. Make sure you check out our website at thelibertybeat.com. I'm Brian Hagan reporting, reminding you, spread liberty with a smile.
50 seconds. You guys ready?
I'm ready.
Yeah, I'm here.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Foreign governments are starting to repatriate their gold. You know, other countries are going off the dollar and the petrodollar. They're starting to trade in precious metals. We have bail-ins and bail-outs. We have countries, we just got laws passed here that my grandchildren are, as taxpayers in the United States of America, are going to be on the hook for the next crash. Now, however it happens and whatever the excuses and whatever account it came from, kind of, dad, it's covered. Don't worry about it. So I can see the advantage of Bitcoin. In fact, a big spike in the value of Bitcoin was during Cyprus when they were just taking, you know, right off the top, 10% of people's bank accounts. We have the retirements are up on the altar in France. They're starting to do it here. I see the power of Bitcoin as being something that can be used to free humanity, but immediately we're in negotiation with they, them, those. My opinion and my advocacy has always been when you dance with the devil, you don't change him. And I'm wondering, are we going to get the government, regardless of how much pressure, how much the people express their opinion, how much the free market votes on it, will they ever give up the concept, the idea that you can anonymously spend? I've been around since the late 80s, from crossbows to cryptography, an article on 88 on the, why the king banned crossbows, because the peasants, they didn't want to have the capability to defend against the king's knights. And it's always about the individual, down to the individual. So I got to ask Bruce first, Bruce Fenton, running for Bitcoin Foundation Board, and to represent the other side, the disbandment of the Bitcoin Foundation, we have Cody Wilson. Now, first, I want to ask Bruce, do you think that regulators or government in general will ever give up the capacity that they wish to be able to track Bitcoin use? Is that something that they're you know, willing to give up, or is that always going to be ever present and you're trying to negotiate the level of that? What is it you think you're going to be able to do?
Yeah, I think I agree with you that if you dance with the devil, you don't change the devil. And I wouldn't advocate dancing with regulators. I think I would be more like either educating them or being on the sidelines fighting them. I was probably, I don't know, maybe the most vocal opponent of Ben Lasky. I mean, certainly in terms of amount of the volume of speeches dedicated to criticizing Lasky and the amount of views on those and the amount of comments. I think I certainly among the most vocal opponents of him. And I think that does create change. I know for certain that the kind of persistent attacks that I made on Lasky, I know has an effect, not so much on him. I don't really care about him, but it does have an effect where people, surrounding him start to think, well, gee, maybe this is more of a pain than it's worth. And other regulators look at it and say, geez, do we really want to have all of these people attacking us and criticizing us and saying that we're anti-jobs and anti-freedom and anti-technology and anti-math? And do we want to have people do what I threatened to do, which is violate the laws? Do they want to have somebody who is an upstanding member of a community, who has, who can go out and say, yeah, I'll violate your law. I'll challenge you in court. Do they really want to fight that? They're going to ask their lawyers and say, gee, is this a fight that we can win? Do we really want to do this? And so I think it kind of affect them. It's not ideal. I wish they didn't exist, but yeah, I think we can change them. So, to answer your question, can we get them to eliminate their control or release their control? They don't want to, but yes, we can. We can. We've seen all kinds of changes, much more profound than that, with freedom of speech and other issues all over the world, where governments have banned Twitter and YouTube and things like that, and the people don't allow it. So, I think we can create change with these people, and it can be a carrot and a stick kind of thing. I mean, if you
met with
Massachusetts regulators, for example, and it was basically just an education session. I just said, look, here's what this technology works. But with Ben Lasky, it was much more of a adversarial kind of thing.
Well, what's your stick?
How so?
Well, you say, it's a carrot and stick thing. We're going to use some stick. I mean, what's your stick?
Yeah, maybe that's not the best term, because you're right. We don't have any force that we can use on them.
Well, but that's kind of my point. The thing is that either Bitcoin can be autonomous, from regulation or not. This has been my question for 4 years. I've been up
stick,
here.
Though, just to answer it, the stick is that you're doing the opposite of what they want. Ben Lasky wants to run for governor. He wants to get a big, important job making a bunch of money right now. That's what he's working on right now. He wants to use this and use our community to get fame so that he can use that fame to help his own career, so he can get a multimillion-dollar job at exactly one of the companies that he exempted from the license. And then he wants to further and use that and run for governor. So I want to do exactly the opposite. So the stick is doing the opposite of what he wants. What he wants is for everybody to say, wow, this guy's great. He's a thoughtful regulator. What he doesn't want is somebody like me to go out there and say, he is a liar. He is corrupt. He is dishonest. He has acted dishonorably to this community.
He's done exactly what he was told or allowed to do. And as he gets up, what was it called? Money 2020 or something I saw. But he made it very clear. If you're not trackable, if your Bitcoin purchases are not where we can see that you're not dealing in whatever the government terms to be, bad, then it's not good enough for him. I mean, I thought that he made his position clear, and that of the government in New York. I mean, I'm going this, which you might as well just say the world. OK, this is, all dollars, pass through Manhattan one way or another. So I'm just going this. I think their announcement, their position is crystal clear. Is there something that you think that is, and it's not clear from their position, or you think it can be altered, or what's your advocacy?
No, I agree. I agree that their position is clear, but I think that they are not fans. I know for sure. I've heard from people who are close to Lasky that they get very annoyed at people like me who are out there calling him a liar and not towing the party line and pretending that he's some wonderful guy and coming out with these comments saying he's thoughtful and he's considerate and all these other ridiculous things that we saw from some people even in our own industry, kind of praising him on his foresight to do this regulation. That's what they want. So I'm doing the opposite.
I saw those comments coming from the Bitcoin Foundation.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's like bad, right?
Yeah, of course.
All right,
Don't put the foundation and me in the same you know, just because I'm running for a seat. I don't represent the existing foundation or its origins any more than Cody or any other candidate.
Well, see, my point is, and Cody, we'll get to you in the next segment, but, you know, my point is that running for the foundation on, you know, the platform of working with the regulators that have made it very clear that they don't want to work with you. You know, I mean, unless it involves where you get to track everything, you can't be a money launderer. And I'm going, and I need that defined, and if it should even be illegal. I mean, what you're saying is privacy. I got a Spanish judge coming out saying, if you use encryption, you're a terrorist. You know, I got the United Kingdom coming out and putting pressure on Obama to put pressure on information transferers here, ISPs and cell phone companies, that they want where the no encryption can be used by the individual in Great Britain. I mean, this is it's and all the stuff in the news that's happening seems to, you know, foster that. You know, we have, you know, SOPA and CISPA and everything keeps coming back. You thought they were going to go away? No. Bitcoin represented the first time that people could just ignore government. And then we have a race that is about, do we work with them or we don't? And we're gonna find out. I mean, are there advantages to having the Bitcoin Foundation? I'm asking. I'm looking. We'll find out. When we come back, Cody Wilson, Bruce Fenton.
Did you know that Free Aid is a mutual aid, educational, and networking organization? At Free Aid, we support volunteers who provide first aid. We do outreach to the public about health and safety, and we bring together medically skilled freedom lovers. Free Aid is made possible by your generous support. Donors can receive great gifts like first aid kits, t-shirts, silver dime cards, and hoodies. The Free Aid Silver Dime Card Project is sponsored in part by Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Freedom's Phoenix, and Don't Tread on Meme. Visit fr33aid.com.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare. I'm here in Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona. We're discussing the Bitcoin Foundation and its, I don't know what we to discuss. Its proposed direction, its capabilities, its usefulness. Let's go ahead and go. We'll take it to Cody Wilson on this. You know, I want to ask, are you a money launderer? Do you advocate money laundering? What is the definition of money laundering? Because the point that I want to get to is that Bitcoin is capable of allowing for individuals to transfer wealth between each other instantaneously around the world at virtually no cost. I mean, I can think of a gazillion industries that have been built up around the regulation, control, and use of money and value that they don't like that none too much. And I'm wondering the Bitcoin Foundation, its usefulness. To whom? I mean, is it industry that it's like a protection racket? They want to operate a business and not get arrested, and they got to say the right things and do the right, meet the right people and glad hand the right regulators to be able to exist. So it's an industry thing, or do we need industry for the backbone so that as consumers we can use it? I'm trying to find a useful, role for the Bitcoin Foundation. Cody, help me out.
And Jesus. So look, I almost can't believe you didn't let me challenge anything that Bruce said.
Here you go. Go, man.
I mean, I how about you let me debate him in this segment? But look, man, do I advocate money laundering? Look, money laundering is a thought crime as defined by the United States government. All right. It's in common law terms, maybe an accessory dimension to crimes that are committed in other kinds of crimes that are committed. But I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of, like, well, is money laundering good or bad, or the moral economics of money laundering? Okay, I believe that it's just defined as a thought crime and that it's one of the most verboten things you could possibly do in this financial landscape. Therefore, it should be curious to you and interesting to you and one of the things that's available for Bitcoin to be able to do. I think it's telling that under the stewardship of the Bitcoin Foundation, you're never going to have Bitcoin anonymity as a development goal. That's just obvious. And back to the point in the previous segment, some of the points that Mr. Fenton brought up, Look, you can speech is valuable. Certainly political speech in America is valuable. Making regulators uncomfortable is better than not making regulators uncomfortable. Okay, so there's some modicum of value there. But the idea that that this is going to influence or we're going to see some progress over what we all know is going to be the situation, namely that every Bitcoin business and service is going to have know your customer, AML rules, and it's basically going to have capitalization requirements if it touches upon anything related to payment processing or service. None of our speech acts are going to stop that dead simple fact from happening. It's going to be the same with the payment services directed in Europe. You're going to already, the Darkwall team is telling me that, you know, in short order, a year, 2 years, you're not even going to be able to develop Bitcoin and NMB software in Europe without a pseudonym and completely living underground. These things are being vociferously criminalized and weeded out by the police forces in Europe especially. And as you mentioned earlier, even before that, Ernie, encryption is now on the chopping block in many of these total states, Great Britain most, I mean, the United Kingdom most recently. But of course, with the new CISPA bill that Obama's proposing and other things, we're going to have basically like the old 90s crypto wars again, where encrypted technologies just aren't worth it in the end, to use Losky's words, right? It's better that we become safe rather than have like novel multiplicative innovations in finance, politics, whatever. So look, when it comes down to the foundation, when it comes down to developing these softwares, I want a claim for political life. I don't want just the ability to say to a regulator, oh, you know, you're a bad regulator. No, I want a claim to the political. They have no problem claiming the political. They have no, like you, as you pointed out, they have no problem showing me and telling me that they have the power, right, to end my community, to penalize and ruin my life. I want a claim to the political too. Bitcoin is that for the people. It really is that. It at least portends that, that there is a new dimension of political life available to us if we can use it. This organization, the Bitcoin Foundation, and other so-called libertarian attempts at stewardship of this code base were not serious in their organizations, and they are not serious going forward. I want to reset the table and have a serious conversation about how we steward Bitcoin globally, individually, and with communitarian efforts.
Okay, when you keep saying libertarian, I've been a libertarian for a long time. Eventually, you go, what are you, Ernie? You're this or that. You're an anarchist. You're this. I'm just a leave me aloneist. And I saw Bitcoin technology as a leave me alone technology. And that was my sole support of it. Initially, you know, it became that. It was the people's currency. It was moving up. And it became a threat enough that, you know, it came to the attention of. But it seemed to me that people in the Bitcoin space, they reveled in the attention. They wanted the attention. They needed the attention. It was like legitimacy came from a government permit or something like that. And I was looking wide adoption as being ease of use. There are many wallets coming out now that, oh my goodness, they're light years what they were even a year ago. And we have a lot of the technology that's coming out to make it even more anonymous, some various projects like Dark Wallet you're working on. But I'm looking at, is regulation inevitable or do we make it so? I'm wondering, the foundation, is it just representative of what you're against? Or is it, can it be changed from the inside as Bruce advocates?
Do you want me to kick this to Bruce first, or do you want me to answer?
No, I go ahead and answer that. I want to give you time, you know, and then, you know, in this hour, we'll start, we can go more back and forth. I just want to make sure everybody gets to have their say. So please go ahead and say.
Okay, yeah. So there's something of a conflation happening when we talk about, like, what is realistic or what is existing? Like, are there such a thing as regulators? Yes, of course, regulators exist in the world. But does that mean, then, that we immediately resign ourselves to the idea that they will successfully regulate our technology? Just because there is always already a working body of regulatory effort that can always set its sights on what we're doing doesn't necessarily mean that you should approach that body in making what you're working on a fully discernible object to that power. There's obviously a strategic dimension in not doing that. This was kind of how Chuck Schumer and other people first discovered Bitcoin. It was in their apprehension of the Silk Road, a kind of disturbance at the idea that people could sell drugs online without them getting, you know, in between. And basically, Bitcoin was kind of brought up with this poor reputation, right? Reputation became one of the big words that
organize a lot of the early people that, that brought us the foundation. They were concerned that if Bitcoin had the wrong reputation with the regulatory personality, or if it was seen as illicit and illegitimate, these are big, big weasel words in this space, that it couldn't be successful, whatever that means.
Yeah, see, hopefully, now that's the point that I want to get right there. Successful, to me, it was already successful as a peer-to-peer use of exchange value, and it was growing. I said, ooh, it was like the distributed internet be a coming. And I'm going, oh, right on. But I'm seeing that it's really for industry, those that want to interface with the banking system. And I'm wondering if these people are the banking system wanting to interface. I don't know. That'd be a good question for Bruce. And then we're in halfway through the show. Now we'll just have a direct back and forth. I just let them go at it and just make sure everybody gets to have their say. But I just wanted to make sure that we kind of got the flavor of what the campaigns are about and their distinctions. We'll be right back.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. And we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm. And Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes. Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you. And please feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
You know, Bruce, that's one thing. When we come back in the second half, I think everybody kind of got to give their spiel. But what we're going to do is I'm going to ask questions of one of you and then immediately let the other one respond. And I'm just going to try and stay out of the way. So I expect when, you know, Cody says something, you say something, you guys are just free to go at it. Okay.
Sure. Can I just have 1 second to clarify something from before? I didn't get a chance to talk from one break before. Just take a second.
Sure. Oh, you mean when we come back?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me... You know, I tell you what, I'll just go ahead and introduce you. You wanted to make a comment about something and just let you get that out of the way. Then I'll get to my first question, okay? And then we'll go back and forth with you guys.
You can put the Liberty Radio Network on the air in your area. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Way, wherever the heck that is. You know, Bruce Fenton and Cody Wilson are running for the Bitcoin Foundation board. And Bruce had in the last segment something he wanted to clarify. We'll go ahead and do that before I go to my first question. Go ahead, Bruce. What was it you wanted to comment
on? Yeah, the only thing was just the comment that I think it was sort of framed as sort of me wanting to work with regulators. And I just want to make it clear that I don't view my platform as wanting to be one that works with regulators. I would say it would be mostly characterized by fighting regulators. And then secondly, educating regulators, the only cases I could conceive of working with regulators would be if they want to unwind or to eliminate or reduce regulation, or if it's something in the rare cases where they want to do something that's totally voluntary, invite me to speak at a conference to tell people about the technology or something like that. But definitely not working with regulators is not something that I consider a priority at all.
But your position isn't ignore them.
It depends. All right. So Ben Lasky, I advocated ignoring him. And just to give you an idea of how this would play out, had I been on the board during this time that his proposal came out, I advocated publicly in San Francisco and Chicago and other places that he should be disengaged with, that we should not work with him. Had I been on the board, I would have said the same thing. I would have encouraged the Bitcoin Top Foundation to make an official position of sending a letter, not responding to his ridiculous bit license, but responding and saying, we will not work with you. We do not believe you are acting in good faith. We will not work with you, and we encourage our members to not work with you. And I would have encouraged every member of the foundation, individual and corporate, to ignore and shun and disengage and marginalize him. Because what happens when you hold a hearing and no one shows up? You know, let him talk to a blank wall. And I think that that would have been the most effective way of dealing with him. And I think that would have hurt him politically. It would have made him look like a fool in front of the people that appointed him. He's not an elected official, but I think that New York was already considered a failure by some other regulators. A lot of other regulators in the country were looking at it and saying, whoa, what happened? Why are people so ticked off? Is this a failure? I think we could have made that pain stronger for him. So that's just an example of the kind of thing I would have done had I been a board member at the time.
Thank you. I'm glad you got a chance to make your statement. Let me go ahead and ask you something Cody brought up. Basically, as I wrote the note down, we're not going to see Bitcoin anonymity as a development goal. Now, I imagine, you know, that's the only goal for a lot of its advocates and, you know, and many users. So I'm wondering, is Bitcoin Foundation, you know, and anonymity is a development goal? Is that part of what you do or not?
I think it should be. And I'm not sure I agree that it would never be a goal. I would want it to be a goal if I'm elected. And I think Gavin said in Amsterdam, I saw him at his keynote in Amsterdam, he said that, I mean, that was one of his main themes, that privacy is important and having having that be a goal of the foundation. So yeah, I think it should be, and I don't see it not happening.
Do you see, Cody, go ahead and respond to that. Do you think that's going to, while you have Bitcoin Foundation as a, I guess, a target? I mean, what is it seen by, is it who gets negotiated with? What is it?
Yeah, the foundation's record speaks for itself, Ernie. I mean, we're over 2 years into this now. Privacy has never been a development goal. Doesn't seem that's going to be. A lot of frustration this summer on what Gavin was spending his time on. It's just, you know, and there's no say. There's no way of directing the process through BIP right now. So, fine. You can elect a couple new members to the foundation. Hope it gets up the chain. Hope you rattle the chain long enough up there to maybe get, you know, maybe, Gavin will fancy it. I have an idea. We're talking about fighting regulators, right? Like, you know, I think you can fight a regulator by defeating his regulation. Specifically, I think you can fight a regulator by destroying his power structure, destroying his ability to regulate you. I don't think you just fight a regulator by being contrary to him in forms of his own choosing or making him look silly. I think that's a tepid kind of anarchism, actually.
Well, Bruce, let's just focus on that a little bit. I mean, that, from the beginning, that was kind of my position, is that I thought, and the promise to me, and I talked to a lot of the guys. I mean, I could rattle off the name of, you know, everybody Bitcoin. In fact, tomorrow, Andreas Antonopoulos is going to come on for 2 hours to discuss this discussion. So I'm going, okay, we're going to get some behind the scenes and part of the core and kind of knows what's up. But I always thought the promise of Bitcoin was that it wasn't regulatable. Is it?
It is, unfortunately. I mean, you know, we live in this world, and as Cody said, I mean, these people exist. As much as we wish they didn't exist, they do. They have the ability to put us in jail. They have the ability to point the guns at us, and they do, and they have. And I believe Charlie was targeted because of his position in Bitcoin. I was in the investment business for 22 years. I never saw a SWAT team, throw down somebody, especially over what, $1 million that's a rounding error for most of the fraud that you know, and outright criminal acts that some of these people do, you know, Lasky's buddies who are in the banking system. I mean, I believe Charlie was targeted because of who he is in Bitcoin. So yeah, that's an unfortunate reality. Yeah, they can't, you know, we can say it's technically you can't regulate it, but the fact is the government could declare, you know, possession of Bitcoin a felony right now and instantly. I mean, do you think Circle or Coinbase would have gotten the $75 million they got this morning if that was the case? No, they wouldn't. They would barely exist. You know, all of these companies that I think are helpful to the space, who are driving adoption and ownership and usage, would have a very, very hard time, and major investors wouldn't invest. So I wish it wasn't the case, but yeah, unfortunately, it is something that they can regulate.
Okay, so that is kind of where we find ourselves, is who's susceptible? Is it the individual? I mean, if they could go down and just make it illegal, I see you have an app on your Android, you must go to jail. I mean, that's kind of what the United Kingdom's asking for. I mean, is that inevitable? Is that where we're going? Or is Bitcoin now in the foundation really a interest group, you know, for industry? Those that interface with the legacy banking system. It seems to me there's Bitcoin and, you know, individual use and transfer of, and then there's those that have anything to do with the banking system and that they need protection. They need a negotiator. They, not me. I mean, how far off am I?
I think it's hard to separate you know, the two that much. It's not like it's us and them. I mean, we're in the same boat, man. I mean, you know, BitPay, Coinbase, Circle, all of us, people who speak and act and work in the community. I mean, we're all in the same boat. We're a small community, and I don't view it as kind of like, oh, these are the corporate guys and we're the individuals. Although I'm running for an individual seat and I'm not in, you know, a Bitcoin corporation like a Coinbase, but I think we're in the same boat. I want Coinbase to succeed. I want, unless it's somebody who's a scam, I want them to succeed in this space.
Not at the expense of me, my freedom. Cody, you know, I'm, is that, no, comment on this.
That was just it. A beautiful flourish there, Ernie, right? It's a kind of reductionism in Bitcoin, which I guess is a consequence of how fast things are moving, how quickly the space is moving. And it's great that technically and otherwise financially the space is moving so fast, but we put on blinders and we said that success is basically mainstreaming at all the cost of all of their values. And you just named the value liberty specifically, which has been kind of...
Well, are we all in the same boat? Are we in the same Bitcoin boat, users, individuals, and industry?
No, I don't think so anymore. And in fact, this is what's embarrassing about the foundation now. It's not actually useful for anything. It might have been a regulatory interface at one point, but now Coinbase specifically, Circle, these other groups which have, and the Anderson Horowitz Nexus, these people which are driving tons of investment, putting tons of money into compliance, they control this compliance and regulatory conversation far more now than some nonprofit Bitcoin Foundation does, which has basically no capital, no real industry A players. So now the Bitcoin Foundation is struggling for some purpose at all.
Oh, yeah. The industry, they can't lobby Ernie, for themselves?
Ernie, all it does is pay Gavin. That's literally the only reason that we're even having this conversation. So instead of let's keep paying Gavin and come up with other ideas, I want other ideas.
All right. This is an interesting conversation. I'm wanting to see. I hate segments. If you guys have time, you know, at the end, we can just go straight through. And I don't want to have the live audience suffer too much. But but you can see. I'm just asking the question, Bruce. I mean, if the Bitcoin Foundation is there and it can benefit some, I don't care. I mean, it's freedom of association, peace out. I don't care. The thing that I'm concerned with is that it's perceived, and I need to know if it is true, it is perceived that the foundation and the interest behind it, which is increasingly becoming industry, especially how much money they pay in, I'm going that the industry needs to be protected from death, dying, destruction, and SWAT teams, and that they're willing to do, I don't know, whatever they need to do. But it seems to me that these BitPay and Circle and a lot of these guys, they, you know, we interviewed them at the Consumer Electronics Show. I know these guys for a long time. I talked to them. David Bailey over at Why Bitcoin. We had a, you know, good conversation. I have hours with Andreas and Roger Ver and Eric Voorhees and Ira and on and on and on and on and on. And I get the same thing. The technology of Bitcoin is far above any single point of failure. And it seems to me that there has been a sprint to create that point of failure to benefit something. And I'm getting, I guess it's just a lack of a SWAT team. And my point was, is Bitcoin, I imagined, was above that in its technology. That was the point. And everything has been to try and bring it back under, you know, working with, not working with. Dan, you're saying, I don't really understand the focus. And when Cody brings up that it's just to pay Gavin, and I'm going, is that the only way Gavin would get paid? Does he need to get paid? I mean, how complex are we doing that before it was done without? And I'm wondering if that development payment is required. Is it we're all going to perish if it doesn't? So there's a lot of things. I've seen this before. When we call it Steiger's Law on the show, Bruce, if you listen to the show, anybody might hear this. And it was, whenever you create an organization or a group around a cause or a movement or anything, sooner or later, the group becomes more important than the reason you created it. Not most of the time, every single freaking time. And I'm seeing that the group itself desires to exist, and it's not clear why. So I just need why.
Well, it's more than just paying Gavin. There's three developers. There's in the new push that has been done to focus on development more, there's other aspects of that. There's this developers program where they're coming to MIT and other places, or I guess Boston. It's not MIT, but to develop the next generation developers. I mean, there is the mechanism of paying these salaries, and the foundation is not large. It's not like it's got $100 million and all they do is pay Gavin. I mean, they don't have a lot of money. And what little they have, they do allocate a lot of those resources to, you know, Gavin and these other developers.
Now, I tell you where their money comes from. It comes from their byline on, they were quoted, they said in the lines of this parlance between government and somebody, and they need a Bitcoin Foundation to put, you know, a quote on it. And I'm going, that's very powerful. The fact they got, that's very powerful right there.
Yeah, being a voice is
what voice for what? See, this is my point. That's what this debate is about.
I've talked to groups as an individual, and I've talked to groups as president of the Bitcoin Association. So when I talked to the regulators in Dubai, which I did,
okay, here we go, we got to come. In.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Turn on the tube. What do I see? A whole lot of people crying, don't blame me. They point their crooked little fingers at everybody else. Spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves. Kick them a this, kick them a that. Your mama's too thin and your daddy too fat.
Get over it! Woo, man, just get over it! Tired of it. Bitching, whining, moaning, complaining, and kind of just get over it. But we need to have some factual information to understand what the heck is going on. You know, this is an interesting conversation. I really appreciate Bruce and Cody willing to come on and have this discussion, because I think it's very important for all of us, you know, and certainly it's all about, you know, me and my grandkids and my family. I'm looking into the future. And I'm Bruce, off air, a lot of, I encourage you to go to the archive. I'm trying not to have too much conversation in the archive. We don't want you, the live broadcast audience, to miss too much. But there are some, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to finish what you were saying. Bruce, please go ahead.
Yeah, so I was saying that a voice can have benefits if you're moving as an individual. I definitely understand this idea of having everything be decentralized. But if you're going to do something like what I did, I went to Dubai and talked to the regulators. To have a standing of an organization, it just helps you get that meeting. I mean,
why were you talking to Dubai regulators? What possible purpose could Bitcoin have to talking to any? I don't understand.
I wanted to see what their stance is now, and what they would do as far as you know, what they're thinking about the technology and that kind of thing, and see if they wanted to get information about it and so on. Because
you have to understand, from my perspective, that was the whole freeing aspect of Bitcoin, is that you know, the 13th wife of Sheikh, what's his name, sitting in the harem basement of, she's got her tablet out and she's conducting business of reality show of life in a harem, and I get paid Bitcoin. I mean, you know, and just, you know, this, you go, oh, are you going to give us a regulation to make that what, legal? I mean, I'm just wondering what it is you're looking for.
We have to I totally am with you. I wish that's the way the world works. But the fact is, it's not the way the world works.
These is exactly how the way the world works. They're called political dissidents, and they're sitting in jail because they don't have the encryption or they can't get rewarded for bit. Like, watch my bit. You put up stuff, and okay, click the on button as I gave you some Bitcoin. So my point is that when you talk to regulators about this, I'm to regulate freedom, I don't see them doing it. Cody, you understand my position? I mean, what am I saying?
Yeah, maybe I can come in and moderate here. I think I'm sympathetic to Bruce's point. I can sense the frustration, too. I mean, I think what he's trying to say is, or maybe one of the unstated assumptions is, if you want to do business in this world, if you want to have a Bitcoin business, or if you want to do something in Bitcoin, if you recognize all types of commercial activity are already prior regulated, you kind of have to know the personality of the regulator within the jurisdiction in which you're working. I believe that is the higher context scenario which Mr. Fenton is assuming. Of course, what you and I are trying to talk about, Ernie, is that, well, look, nothing happens outside of the predetermined models that are given to us by, royal estate science without first this idea of finding these loopholes and doing things which the prior situation had already deemed to be impossible, illegal, not political, right? We have to make these breaches, these claims to action, which were deemed to be illegal or criminal beforehand. And then, of course, we've got this total superstructure, which is closing itself over Bitcoin. And we want the capacity to do things in Bitcoin, which we know state structures don't want us to be able to do. There's a fundamental tension there. And all I can say is, folks, look, you got a choice. You know what I'm saying? I want to represent a dimension and directionality in Bitcoin development, which doesn't just give itself over to being kind of reflected by the regulatory personality. We don't just need to create an organization in the state's preconceived images. And then you have Mr. Fenton, who is admittedly more of a pragmatist, liberal ideologue.
Bruce, is that kind of, you're representing the ability to conduct business in Bitcoin via a service? I mean, the purpose of you meeting with other countries and so on is, I met with Kraken. We interviewed Kraken for, I don't know, 10, 12 minutes at the Consumer Electronics Show last week. And as we're talking to them, it became very clear that they're working with the Japanese government trying to bring about policies that would allow them to conduct business. And is their goal to bring those policies and what they've negotiated with the Japanese government to the U.S. banking system, as if there was a difference between the two? So I'm just going, I can see the businesses in Bitcoin, the industry, the people that make money for their service, that take a transaction fee for what I can see them seeing a large billions of people that they can access through governments. Then there's the whole other side of the loincloth wearing 9-year-old in the Congo with a cell phone on that's the center of communication for an entire valley conducting Bitcoin exchanges on widgets. I mean, or a vine or a bug. I mean, these two are diametrically opposed in their goals, in my opinion. And I'm wondering, the Bitcoin Foundation, who do they more represent? Bitstamp or the BitKid in Kenya? You see my point?
Yeah, I'm running for the foundation. I'm not speaking on behalf of the foundation now, so I'm not going to answer to what they represent now, because that's not something I've been responsible for.
Well, of course,
for.
What would you like them to represent?
What I want it to represent, and what I represent personally, is just like I said, I want to fight regulators, but I do think it's okay to educate regulators. And in this Dubai, the reason I use Dubai example, they're very friendly to Bitcoin. You were looking at it from a United States lens, where our regulators are very anti-freedom and anti-business and so on. The regulators in Dubai that I talk to, their attitude isn't like, how can we stop you? It's like, why not? Why not allow this? The chief technology advisor to the leader of Dubai spoke at our conference in December, and he said that he's very bullish on Bitcoin. He's recommended that they buy Bitcoin. He's recommended that they even consider setting up their own altcoin. So I don't think it's a bad thing to talk to these people, because we can live in this fantasy of this ideal world where everybody is decentralized and everybody goes and reads Lysander Spooner and understands these concepts. That's not the real world. The fact is that these people don't understand this stuff and these concepts in general. And if we're not talking to them, Ben Lasky's going to be talking to them, or some other person who is completely opposed to what we're looking for.
We're in Coins in the Kingdom in Orlando, Florida, I don't know, a few months ago. And
I'd like to follow up on that, Ernie.
Okay, real quick. I had a conversation with Andreas. He goes to the U.S. Senate in Canada, and he made it very clear to them, like a week later we had talked about this, and he goes there and he says, you know, you better hold off on regulations, Storm, because, you know, you can't really regulate it. I mean, that was the point. I mean, he was honest with him. He told him, you know, you can't. Now what? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Cody.
No, it's all good. I bristle at the idea that anti-statism is somehow impeached because it's seen as impractical or not, you know, in the balance of probabilities as determined by the current people who occupy positions of power in the world. This is radically insane, like, and it's offensive. I mean, frankly speaking, like, I don't believe that it is unreasonable to assume now that we have a stateless currency that we can do stateless things with a stateless currency. I mean, it's kind of like the cognitive dissonance is at an amazing level. And Dubai, for example, right? Yes, this is actually a very useful point of conversation. You should jurisdiction shop when you want to do interesting things. Thank God we don't have a total state situation. We can go to Dubai, for example, to do interesting commercial things. But Dubai is not a great example for this kind of stuff. That place is a desert apartheid. Everybody knows it. 90% of the people there aren't citizens, don't even have basic human rights it's like a corporate wonderland, man. I mean, Dubai is not the example you want to be hawking at people for how we can get things done in the world. I mean, that place is capriciously interested and curious about, you know, harboring some kind of competitive advantage in business terms from whatever is like the cutting edge of things right now. Same thing with Singapore, but you never want to live there. You never want to do, you know, turn the world into Dubai. We're interested in doing things outside of state structures with Bitcoin, and specifically on the conversation of the foundation, we don't believe in state apologism, and the Bitcoin has been the chief cheerleader of state apologism in Bitcoin thought. I say, look, if you're libertarian in Bitcoin, let's destroy the Bitcoin Foundation. Isn't it an embarrassing reminder of how naive we were at the beginning of this enterprise? Let's go ahead and get rid of it and organize something like the BETF. But look, it's a separate conversation. And at this point,
well,
I believe
know,
we'll begin to bypass each other.
The jurisdiction.
Should Andreas have spoken to Canada?
I'm sorry?
Cody, do you think Andreas should have declined his invitation to Canada and not spoken to them?
I don't want to act like there's some kind of like purity test, okay? But yeah, if it was me, I wouldn't have done it. And Canada's proposed regime is perhaps more expansive, right, in its ambiguities and vagueness than even the proposed DFS regime and Lasky's regime. Now, does it matter that the Canadian regulators might be more friendly than Lasky or not?
You know, jurisdiction shopping, that was a good point to bring up as we come back into the third hour of this. And we may have some discussion in the break a little bit, go to the archive. But my main thing is, you know, that's kind of what Coinapult did. Eric Voorhees, you know, in with BitInstant and Charlie Schrem, and kind of after all that, it's kind of, you know what, I'm jurisdiction shopping, I'm in Panama now. Does he have to worry about regulators, you know, or is he specifically setting it up to not? You know, I see these things happening anyway. Good discussion. All of us got something to think about. Bruce Fenton, Cody Wilson. Okay, we'll go ahead and take a break real quick. Everybody go to the bathroom and so on. Then I'll come back and maybe we have a conversation.
I'm heading to the airport, man. I don't believe the call will drop, but just call me back if it does.
All right. Donna, did you hear that? Okay, if his call drops, Cody's in the airport, doing just call him back. Okay, so when I come back, I'll go ahead and take some notes and some points that you guys want to make sure or questions you want to make sure get addressed that we can bring up so that everybody gets to, you know, talk about what they want to talk about and get the response of the other person. I'll go ahead and write those down. We'll make sure we get to them. Okay, Bruce?
Sure.
All right, Cody? All right, yeah, we'll be right back.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
From Kingdon, the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Daryl W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Monday, January 19th, 2015. Silver is trading at $17.79 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,278 per ounce. And according to BitcoinAverage.com, the average price of Bitcoin is $211. Antiwar.com reports, according to a spokesman for Russian President Vladimir Putin, his Ukrainian counterpart, Petro Poroshenko, rejected a proposal to move forward with the peace process between the Ukrainian government and the Eastern rebels. The proposal was a fairly modest advance on the current ceasefire, calling for both sides to withdraw heavy artillery away from combat areas and into areas where they would not be so conveniently used. Russian officials said that not only had Poroshenko rejected the proposal, but that he had almost immediately ordered a new round of offensives in the southeast, which Russia warned violated the Minsk agreement already in place. Both Russia and the OSCE have called for a return to calm, but it seems that the ceasefire is tottering after months of relative calm, with fighting in several places, including the rebel capital of Donetsk. For over 35 years, Roberts & Roberts has been a trusted source for buying and selling your investment-grade precious metals. They also take Bitcoin for precious metal purchases and permanently removed the minimum purchase order for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Roberts & Roberts today for knowledgeable advice on investing and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 850-478-5270 or online at rrbi.co. UPI reports, according to a new study.
Hey, Bruce. I got you, Bruce.
Hey there. Sorry, I was on mute.
One thing that just reminded me, you know, Roberts & Roberts taking Bitcoin. It was at least 2-3 years ago. It was Eric Voorhees came on, and Ira, I think it was BitInstant. And we were promoting this, as soon as I can get into precious metals and whatever, loop close, rock and roll, you know, here we go. Well, they live on the air, you know, we did, went to BitInstant, go to Bank of America, you know, it said, you know, where do you want to go? You want to go CVS Pharmacy, Walmart, Western Union, whatever, your bank. I go, let's do a bank. We go to Bank of America, I walk in with $200, I say here, put it on, it cost me $1.30, whatever. Do a wire transfer, no ID, no nothing. And I go, wow, that's cool. I'm sure they got cameras somewhere. But I mean, you know, I'm like, I get to go in, put in cash, wire transfer. I got Bitcoin, went to a metals dealer that we had hooked up, you know, with BitInstant. You know, before Roberts & Roberts, it was Liberty Precious Coin and Metals in Scottsdale in San Diego, Del Mar or whatever. They were just open. They wanted access to our audience. They want to let the Liberty community know they were there. And I said, well, here's a good way to do it. You know, show that this works. I go there that afternoon. Paid Bitcoin, got silver, loop closed. I mean, man, rock and freaking roll. Here we go. Boom. Charlie's arrested. So I'm going, you know, that was my first experience in following the process. Everybody's trying to be legal and gazillions of dollars in lawyers and everything. It was very clear to me that those did not want this, you know, advocated. They didn't want, those big giant frog march and SWAT team kind of M16s and stuff. And I'm going, they see, the banking, the government, the whatever, see this as a threat. Are you trying to make it to where it's not seen as a... I'm trying to advocate for a justification for your position, because if the foundation continues and you're elected in there and you're a voice, I need to be clear what that voice is or how I can influence that voice. You know, because I'm thinking, I started putting in cold storage. I went up to have Tux event in Las Vegas teach me how to do paper wallets so that I can kind of set some aside and put it in, you know, for grandkid, kind of what the heck, here's, you know, one, two for each kid and kind of in peace. You know, it might be worth something someday or not. But I don't see the long-term advocacy for my freedom by even the industry, because they're having to work with the governments. So this is my perspective. I'm not for or against the foundation as much as I am for the technology as it was promised. And I'm wondering if the foundation can, you know, break that promise in code. I mean, it's, you know, Cody will tell you, I've been screaming. I'm going, look, if those can change, alter, manipulate, maneuver, if they can, they are. I mean, they are, that's their nature. You know, so I just need to know if they can. That's why I always keep asking, can't Bitcoin be outside of government influence? You see my point?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the perfect scenario, of course. I mean, the perfect scenario would be that it reaches a technical level that there's absolutely no possible way that they can regulate it. That would be great.
Okay, I'm all right.
For that.
So why are we talking to him? We're not there yet.
I mean, we're not there yet. And
I mean, is it technical thing or a philosophical thing or people education thing? I mean, I thought the technology at its core was that.
All right. So suppose we did have the technical ability to do that. And this is an important point because it came up last time when we were talking. But suppose the government made it illegal, like they're doing in Russia, or worse.
Anything that's going to free me, they're going to make illegal. I just need to be in a position that it doesn't matter. See, I don't care if they make it illegal. I just want to make sure it doesn't matter.
All right, so there's where we differ. I do care if they make it illegal.
Okay, that's what we'll talk
about.
I don't want them to make it illegal because
I want this thing
from
to
the
work.
Studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Ernest Hancock. You know, that's one thing. You don't need to. When I first started doing radio in 03, you know, I'd be on the morning show and going, declare your independence. And then some bright individual called in and said, how can I declare my independence if I do it with you? Can I do it by myself, on my own? Yes, you can. And you just did it. No government form. So Bitcoin to me represented, you know, the first opportunity that I saw for us to be, other than, you know, just cash, which, you know, had its issues, you know, silver and gold, which had a lot of edge. That's why we, you know, advocated for the creation of the silver calculator app, you know, on iPhone and Android. Silver calculator. We do the dime card thing. Hey, we can start, you know, doing trade. And with this point of sale aid, you know, we can actually do that. And then right when that started to take off, and man, we're selling like 6,000 dime cards in a day working with Michael Nystrom at Daily Paul. I mean, boom, it was like, damn, here we go. Then here came Bitcoin. Then the interest kind of go, oh, cool. Do we have interface with silver and Bitcoin? Hey, it's a good, cheap, easy way to move my silver from this country to that country. I'm good. It's all done. Yep, thanks for playing. But it became clear to me that they, them, those that won't leave me alone do not want that. And they need somewhere to go or someone to arrest or some advocacy or PR battle that they can have where that was bad and they need to go after it. I see the technology, as we have discussed blockchain technology for many other applications, as very effective in doing a lot of things. Like, I have in my safe right now a trust that bought some auction land that sold immediately to another trust with the paperwork and paid the taxes on it, got it all into transfer here and went to somebody or something sitting in my safe waiting, not to put it on the county recorder's docket there or their title, a flow of title, or where it's, you know, who got what. I got the highest evidence of it's mine and I pay the taxes on it. It's good enough for me and I just want to register it on the blockchain. When is that going to be accepted? Soon. So we've been watching the technology. We've been seeing how I can register my bicycle, my boat, you know, my pocket knife. I understand what the potential is, but it can be killed. It's killed by an idea, by acquiescence to the inevitable government, the man with the gun. Look for who's going to implement force. If you have technology that does not allow that, or is impervious to it, or is immune from it, I wish to pursue that. I wish to analyze it, learn it, develop it. I'm not seeing that the Bitcoin Foundation is making core development a priority in the area of anonymity. And in fact, whenever early on, when Cody Wilson was out talking about Dark Wallet or other groups were talking about the anonymous use of Bitcoin, it was the Bitcoin Foundation that was kind of, we need to talk to and work with and regulate. Now we have two anarchists, you know, certainly tendencies, Cody Wilson and Bruce Fenton, advocating for them being on the board of the Bitcoin Foundation so that they can better something. Let's go ahead and just do kind of this last hour here, just kind of give a summary, and we'll start with Bruce. You know, okay, after the first 2 hours of this, you know, certainly from our line of conversation, that you'll be able to articulate clearly for those that wish to join to vote or are already a member of the Bitcoin Foundation. A vote for you is a vote for the advocacy of what?
Well, your point about anonymity, I mean, I've said that in my Reddit AMA and a couple of things. I do think that should be a priority. So just to be absolutely clear on my platform and what I believe, I absolutely believe that should be a priority in the way that the foundation interacts and works with core development. I think anonymity should be key, and it's a key component. And by the way, kind of, you haven't mentioned it, but sort of closely related to that, I also am absolutely completely against, taking coins and blacklisting coins or any of these efforts to sort of, you know, reduce the fungibility or say that, you know, that these coins are bad coins or, you know, coin validation kind of thing. So that, just to be clear, that's one thing. And I think, the other thing I think that isn't always coming through in this conversation is, you know, kind of what I said before about, before the segment, there was a comment that, kind of it's this battle of not dealing with regulators or dealing with regulators and having adoption at all costs or what you said, which was, if we make it easy for Circle and BitPay, then that sacrifices your liberty. That's not what I'm advocating. I don't think it has to be an either or. I don't agree with anything that would sacrifice your liberty, and I wouldn't support that. And I want to be clear that's not what I'm advocating.
Cody?
Oh, well, I thought you were going to ask him to follow up with what he was advocating.
No, go ahead. You ask.
Yeah. So what I'm advocating is the focus on the core, the core development, and yes, having anonymity be a key to guard the basic principles of Bitcoin. Some of the things that I think I would hope every candidate agrees with, you know, basic things like, the way that the code works, the limit on coins and things like that, which are kind of hardwired into Bitcoin itself. And as far, the other area that I think is different from other candidates is what I said with, as I've mentioned a couple of times, I think that, there is value in educating, first of all, fighting regulators. And I think it's one tool. I totally agree that being a dissident and going, totally off grid and fighting them that way, that's a valid and good tool. And I would advocate that in certain markets and certain places. I think fighting them can be a very good tool, and I think educating them can be a good tool. I'm an eternal optimist, and I would talk to anyone, no matter how great of an opponent they are. I have some hope. I tried to reach out to Ben Lasky in a friendly way before all of this happened. That's one of the reasons the Bitcoin Association was founded, was I was hoping there was some sliver of a chance that he could be reasoned with. He ignored that, as I suspected he would. And then once he absolutely proved, as I suspected, that he was acting in bad faith, then I turned it to fighting him. So I think all of those can be useful. I'm an optimist. I would try to convince people. And I have done this. I've done this many, many times. I've met with a lot of people where I've talked to regulators and said, hey, what moral right do you have to use force against somebody? I have gotten them to think about it. And when that fails, fight them.
Is that what your position with Dubai? I mean, as a board member of the Bitcoin Foundation, you know, are you advocating that you'll be available for question that capacity of other governments and other regulators and other regions and other the BRICS? I mean, the different banking. You see my point?
Yeah. I would continue doing a lot of what I've done already, which is make myself available to anyone who wants to talk about Bitcoin, whether it's an organization or a chamber of commerce or individual or a company or a regulator and or even an opponent of Bitcoin. I would like to try and talk some sense into them. And, you know, as I mentioned, I talk to regulators and my goal with regulators is to say, hey, look, what are the concerns that you have? What is your problem? Is it like you just mentioned? Are you looking for a PR, a news release?
They're looking for control.
Yeah. I mean, are you really looking to protect consumers? Because if you're really looking to protect consumers, I could tell you ways that the technology can protect consumers without you having to make a force-backed law or regulation.
That was kind of the advocacy that Andreas was making. If you really are looking to protect the people, we got technology for that in this presentation to the Canadian Senate. When we come back, Cody Wilson's response to Bruce Fenton. We're having a very informative discussion. We'll be right back.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona.
When we come back, I'm just going to throw it back to Cody to respond on what Bruce has said. Cody, you got in your mind your response? You know, I don't want you to forget and us miss the...
Oh, yeah, I know. I'll frame it up like his.
No, that's fine. Just so long you got the issue, because you break when people listen to the archive. It's like, boom, squirrel, we're off on something else, you know, and they get pissed off.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, as long as you set it back up like that, it'll be fine.
You're assuming I remember. I already forgot. So it's Advocate 4, right?
Yeah, sure.
The international component, I mean, just from a personal note here, what do you guys think the international footprint of the Bitcoin Foundation is now? Is that all they see? You know, if I'm in Africa or Asia or something and I'm looking for information on Bitcoin, am I emailing the Bitcoin Foundation first?
It's got affiliate chapters, internationally, so...
So it's Bitcoin Foundation. I mean, those are...
Mexico. Well, yeah, they're trying to reproduce their form in other places. I mean, like, officially speaking. I think also they have affiliates that aren't specifically their own franchise. But, you know, again, this is something that's not quite clear because of the dearth of documentation from the top.
Okay, so we'll talk about that. Bruce, are you able to comment on affiliates and chapters and worldwide footprint and all that stuff?
Not too much more than what Cody just said. I mean, it's...
Well, see, a lot of these agreements and so on and these discussions go on. It's kind of in my name or user's name or Bitcoin name. And a lot of this stuff, I'm advocating for. What the hell, man? You know, this is... Might as well... I made this comment. They... all right. In Orlando at Coins in the Kingdom, I had an opportunity to speak, and I said, look, I only want 10 minutes. And that's like unheard of for me. I mean, you know, that's what? You know, because I'm going, you know, these guys know way more than me about this, and there's nothing and all I had was one question. You know, I just want to make sure that people understand, you know, what this originally was all about and ask some questions about, you know, how it could be altered and so on. But I really, really focus in on the ability of the individual to autonomously be able to conduct business without any contribution, retribution. That was the first thing for me. And as activist, the first place I ever gave my credit card to give any money on the internet ever was to $5 a month because I couldn't afford any more to antiwar.com. And then I'm good friends with Angela Keaton for years, or activists inside LP and all this other stuff. And what happened was, I'm going, wow, it didn't shock me that, you know, the FBI was, you know, targeting contributors and all this kind of stuff. And I'm going, wow, what better place to be able to autonomously be able to provide support for an organization, you know, WikiLeaks, and they shut down credit cards. I mean, I see this over and over and over and over. And for Bitcoin to be not that is, when the technology is there, it's a crime against humanity. I mean, I'm wondering, everything that I see has always been to appease, certainly from the foundation, some government regulator. And I understand, Bruce, that you've been out, no, we shouldn't talk to him. But I mean, it keeps coming back to, well, I'll talk to him in any country and anything in a capacity of. I start to see the advocacy that Cody's making. then such an organization shouldn't even exist for those very reasons. So I'm looking to trying to give a justification or how it can be if it's going to be there.
Don't equate what I've said about what I would do with what the foundation has done. I wouldn't have done things the way the foundation has done.
Well,
so
we'll
just
talk
because
about
I'm
that.
Running doesn't mean that I agree. Adamantly
well, let's say that on air. Here we go.
Let's cover our satellite costs with the chip in on the right side of the page at LRN.FM.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
The saddle of what? The saddle of I want to advocate for leave me alone as the world, and I've been advocating for this for like ever, and looking for what? I'm looking for the tech to do it. I mean, does it exist? Well, I advocated that it did. I mean, we talked about it, and I saw its development in the minds of the people, and there was a narrative. If you're using Bitcoin and the man doesn't know exactly what you did with it, you must be a terrorist. I mean, this is what's coming. Encryption itself. I went through this. I'm 53. I remember the early 90s of Phil Zimmerman and PGP encryption cases of you're going to jail. You know, this is I see a lot of it coming, but industry and businesses see an enormous value to people. You know, there's a lot of things that can be done. They go, oh, let me show you what we can do. But we have to have government permission slip or you go to jail. So is the tech able to survive this attempt? We'll see. But we have advocates, you know, on both sides of this. Now, I want to give Bruce an opportunity to express himself. Bruce, go ahead. You wanted to make a comment.
Well, I think just at the break, we were saying when I talk about fighting regulators and educating regulators, it is very, very different from what the foundation has done. So I certainly don't agree with a lot of the things that they have done. And we don't even know for sure what they've done in terms of how they've reached out to regulators. We don't have the transparency on that, but I certainly, have suspicions. And based on what we do know, I'm absolutely not one of these people who thinks that we want to ask for regulation or ask for smart regulation or any of these things. I think we should fight that. And, the only interaction should be education-based.
Cody?
Yeah, Bruce's – I don't mean to equate Bruce's candidacy with, for example, Jim Harper's. So it's important for all the people listening at home that we recognize that the Bitcoin Foundation did pursue until December of last year – a direction which had at its core pursuing policy directions, maintaining lobbying firms, working with regulators to create preferential treatment of industry and individuals. Yeah, that worked very well. And really the only person now left saying that's still a good idea is a guy running for the board named Jim Harper. He used to be their global policy counsel. Literally no one else of the Bitcoin Foundation's leadership, and even I would say its board, advocate a position of working with regulators now, which should not be that surprising. But at the same time, my argument is not that the foundation should be destroyed just for its past actions, but it's that any type of justifications, not just communicative, but any type of justifications of the state form are its active manifestations. So it's not just, that was too much. That's not an easy thing to describe, but basically anything outside of core development is manifesting the state form and allowing it to enter back into our lives. Like even just recognizing contextually that there are these powers gives them some power over us. And so if we're just going to talk about core development, which is the only conversation the Bitcoin Foundation wants to have now, let's talk about core development in a way that other successful internet standards groups have done it for a protocol. And this is not the way that the foundation is currently organized. It's in fact what needs to happen is so radically different from what the foundation is that the foundation shouldn't exist at all.
You know, the foundation, as I go and I look at, and research for this, I've been covering it for a long time. I go and I kind of look at the documents and the different committees and such. And I see that there hasn't been updates for sometimes, I don't know, years. There's not really, I'm wondering if the foundation structurally, who is it?
Look,
The foundation is composed of industry, so it's based on a representative principle. It's composed of industry representatives, that's about 50% of its representation on the board, and then individual representatives, which sometimes, because of conflicts of interest, are might as well be industry representatives. But basically, these people are supposed to represent the Bitcoin community, if you will. But it's all a kind of reification of the idea of a Bitcoin community and industry. These people are happy to see themselves reflected in their representatives in this stuff. We know that Republican and Democratic principles don't really work in tiny organizations like this, or in large ones. The whole idea is that the Bitcoin Foundation was supposed to be an interface for power to speak on behalf of or on the part of Bitcoin. Well, now it doesn't want to do that. So let's talk about how we can actually pursue its goals outside of its form. And I'm trying to make an argument that formal organization matters. This form of organization is conducive to the multiplication of the state form and will always be that way. There's no way to get around that. So I want to throw, I mean, just for one example, I don't believe that there should be a formal membership process to participate in the development of Bitcoin. I believe that in true open source spirit, there should be an open documents and open contribution standard. The Bitcoin improvement proposal process is mostly this way already, but it's not totally consensual. It's not totally open in its documentary processes. Let's do this like we're actually serious about making a global internet standard protocol. Let's not just have a fun little clubhouse where we elect some representatives and just outsource all the problems away. That's not dealing with your problems.
Bruce, do you see Bitcoin Foundation could be morphed into something more like what Cody is talking about?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, one thing I would ask Cody is if we really think about, you know, because we agree on quite a few things, actually. But one thing I would ask on the platform of running to destroy the foundation, how does the actual mechanics of that work? So for one thing, I have a couple questions to ask Cody. You know, sort of why pick the, if you want to destroy something, why pick the Bitcoin Foundation? Why not the American Bankers Association? American Bankers Association spends more money on lobbying than the Bitcoin Foundation has ever had. So why not run for that board and work to destroy them? And which goes to the second point of what if it fails? If you get elected and you make your first motion as a board member, say, I move to dissolve the foundation, and nobody seconds it, or one person seconds it, and the motion fails. Well, then what? What do you do next? Do you intend to continually attend the board meetings? I mean, would you become a member of this organization that you don't like? I mean, would you be a member, and would you continue to keep going to board meetings? And every board meeting, your only contribution is to say, I vote for dissolution. I mean, would you be a member, or would you just attend one meeting and not attend the other ones?
Well, I'm happy to answer. Okay, so number one is why the foundation, Cody? Why not disband something bigger that's actually destroying our lives? Well, look, the Bitcoin Foundation claims to represent and claims to be composed of and constitutive for the libertarian in Bitcoin. That's what it claims for itself now, because CoinCenter, BitPay, Coinbase, all these people are now occupying the industry lobby and industry compliance roles. What is the Bitcoin Foundation? Well, we're the libertarians in Bitcoin that developed the Bitcoin protocol. Bullshit. So, number one, I don't believe that I'm going to take that standing down, and most of the libertarians in Bitcoin aren't going to take that standing. We don't believe that the Bitcoin Foundation represents us. So a death to that foundation, a ritual death to that foundation, to reconfirm the libertarian principles of those of us actually in Bitcoin. No, Bitcoin Foundation, you don't represent us. In fact, we radically disassociate ourselves from you in destroying you. I want to give that opportunity to people. I believe that there's enough of a constituency in Bitcoin which would entertain this idea. Number two, the mechanics. How would this happen? I don't believe it. Come on, Ernie, let me answer this when I get back.
Go.
Basically, all we got to do is have a simple quorum. A simple quorum and a simple majority of that quorum can easily dissolve this foundation. Maybe it doesn't happen the first time. Maybe it doesn't happen a second time. But there are so many granular ways that I can eat at this foundation's ability to be so effective in what it's doing. I want to answer this when we get back.
Well, you can keep going.
Oh, man, okay, so listen. I hear the music, all right? So look. Will not allow the foundation to have these conversations with regulators anymore. Why? Because I will prevent these conversations from happening. I will tell you what is going on. I will find the documents. I will take all the documents that have not been shared with the public, give them to the press. We will render this foundation useless in its attempts to work with regulators. We will ruin its very purposes and despoil its reputation so badly that no one will work with it.
Bruce, are you advocating for all these documents and the meetings and this backroom kind of what we didn't know about stuff to be exposed? And if so, you know, might that destroy Bitcoin as a representative? Well, I suspect it wouldn't, because regulators need somebody to go, yeah, well, we love you more now. So what do you think would happen?
I'd absolutely advocate for releasing the documents. I, as a member, I would want to know, and I think the community should know, what has the foundation been up to, and what is it? But my point would be to move on. I mean, these things are not something that I had anything to do with. So I get the sense that you're kind of painting it as if I represent the existing foundation.
No, I don't.
I agree with Cody that it doesn't represent us. I have a different technique on how I think to best fix that.
My technique is to not allow any organization or collective to represent my interest for non-collectivism.
So what suppose this worked, Cody, what then? Are you going to go after the Digital Chamber of Commerce next, the Bitcoin,
No. The Bitcoin Foundation claims to represent me. That is a lie. That can be ended. And Gavin Anderson is a risk seeker. He will go where there is money. So we can reorganize how we do Bitcoin Core development easily, in a fashion which he has already advocated. He is already on record saying he supports the implementation of a Bitcoin engineering task force with principles like the Internet engineering task force. All he needs is somebody giving him a check. These engineers are just used to structured environments. They don't need this foundation.
Why not focus on doing that? Why not create that right now? I mean, why not do it so that it's done? I mean, you could do that organization.
This is an example of what we can do. You can agree with me right now to say, when we get in there day one, both of us get elected, let's say, hypothetically, we sit down and we say, look, we are reorganizing this board's bylaws. It's standard charter. We are doing away with all these articles of talking about basically everything. But I believe that you have to wind up the corporation and introduce a completely different charter. I would change its name, and basically it would not have the capacity to do any of the things that it's currently able to do. We would get rid of the representative principle. We would get rid of the membership requirements, and we would open and institute an open documents procedure. Well, all I'm trying to say is, if you and I do that, Bruce, that is the elimination of the foundation anyway.
All right. So how about I agree that the foundation as we know it should be changed. I mean, that's something we agree on.
Well, so what is it, Bruce? You just like the name or what?
No, I don't care about the name. I just think we're the devil's in the details of these things. I mean, I created the Bitcoin Association as a decentralized organization. We worked with the Eris platform, which is the one that came in second place for Olivier Janssen's contest to replace the foundation. I didn't create the Bitcoin Association and the other members. Some of them wanted to replace the foundation. That wasn't my goal. I never said it was to replace the foundation. But coincidentally, it was along the same path of what Olivier did when he awarded this prize to replace the foundation. So, but the devil's in the details. These things are easier said than done. The actual mechanics of saying, okay, if Cody won and succeeded in dissolving the foundation, how do you actually implement these things? I wish Cody's efforts were spent on trying to create this other alternative, or in my opinion, trying to make the current system work in a much better and transparent way that really does represent us.
All right.
I believe that I'm a credible threat in making the current system not work.
Okay, here we go.
Important backstop.
Get LRN.FM into more ears. Visit promote.lrn.fm for a free bumper sticker, flyers, banners, graphics, and more. Promote.lrn.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Stop me, cause I'm having a good time, having a good time.
Shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity.
And several other laws, I'm sure.
Like a dive.
Oh!
I'm gonna go.
There's no stopping me. Well, it looks like there's an attempt to stop individuals from being able to do the leave me aloneist thing. I'm very concerned that we're on a track that will, whenever we come up with tech that gives us the ability to resist surveillance, resist coercion, resist influence from someone else other than us acting in our own self-interest, that there's always going to be, you should share. And here's a gun to your forehead saying that you really, really should. And I'm looking, if I can, interact with other individuals, I always go, when I go on Craigslist, I'll say, do I get a discount if I pay in silver? I mean, I got 1 out of 10 times. Why, yes, you do. So I just to see if they can, well, now it's, do you take Bitcoin? Do you take, well, yes, I do. You know, and I'm going, damn it, because I want to keep it. But, you know, this is a new tech that has the capacity to free over half the planet that simply do not have access to financial services. When Coinapult made the, I don't know if it's still on or not, they were talking about doing a bit drop on Dominica in the Caribbean. And I'm going, you know, are we going to free 73,000 people? Or is there going to be, everybody's going to be targeted? I see you have a wallet. Thank you for playing. Now we know. I'm looking for the anonymity of billions of minds being able to freely interact with each other. Is the Bitcoin Foundation going to be, if not an advocate for that, or at least help grease the skids for it, or are they going to be an impediment, a hurdle? This is a discussion that's going on. And when, Cody Wilson and Bruce Fenton are vying for the board of the Bitcoin Foundation. And Cody continues to make the point that Bitcoin is libertarian. So I got to ask Bruce that. Is when we say libertarian, you know, decentralized, no single point of failure, nobody's in charge. As you read Satoshi's white paper, you're going, wow, this is very anarchist or libertarian. Do you see tech as being, it's libertarian at its fundamental core? Does it need to be changed? Does it need to be preserved? Would you define it as such, Bruce?
Yeah, I think anybody can use and appreciate the tech, even if you're a statist or a conservative or liberal or whatever. But I do think at its core, you can't really separate what it does and what it is from its political implications. I mean, I agree. Bitcoin is at its very core anarchist and libertarian. Some people may be uncomfortable with that, but I think that's a fact because of what it does. It reduces state power. It reduces centralized authority. And as Roger Ver has said, at the end of the day, when this thing has really, really succeeded, if it does, then it has the ability to end wars and change life as we know it.
Well, what would be the downfall bit? What would make it not succeed? Is there some technical problem or is it a government thing? I mean, its vulnerability?
We're on a knife's edge right now. I've dedicated my life and my money and everything else into Bitcoin. I believe in this space. I'm taking massive risk that it will work, but we don't know that for sure. Great ideas don't always work.
Why?
The Tucker was a better automobile and it was crushed. So I think which is all the more reason I think it's important. I wish Cody would spend his effort. He has significant brain power and intelligence and a lot of people. He has a way of reaching people. I wish he would spend his efforts doing something that builds.
Maybe
let's go ahead and let Cody discuss something better.
Let's let Cody discuss that. I mean, do you see this as a most useful time for you?
This is probably my favorite question at this point. Like in libertarianism, there seems to be a productivist vocabulary, which is like, well, why don't you build something? Why don't you do something productive? Lord knows that, like, I have beliefs that, yeah, you should spend your time doing things which create capacity and free spheres of action for people. But in this instance specifically, I see myself as the only credible threat to prevent the foundation from going on its dogged course. Literally, if I was on the board, it would be terrifying for these people to go on doing the things that they've done in the way that they've done them. Now, I'm not trying to sell myself just as that. I will do everything I possibly can to not only get myself, but other people onto this board, or to persuade and have over everyone else on the board, at least enough of the people to have a majority in a simple quorum to do the things that I've talked about doing. And I don't believe that that's too difficult now that Gavin has basically endorsed my position, with other words. I just believe that sometimes you have to make a stand on ritual positions like this. It's important for the libertarian in Bitcoin to reconfirm his libertarianism and to show that he is not represented by this foundation and that this foundation should be eliminated for the things that it has done. This isn't purely punitive. This has a constitutive and productive element. It's showing what we believe to be the truth about ourselves in Bitcoin.
No, the discussion is worth having. I mean, at least that, Bruce, I like having, because when originally what had happened, a consumer electronics show, and Paul Snow has become a good friend, and he has the Texas Bitcoin conference that we're going to. We disagree ideologically, but, you know, he wants to see wide adoption for Bitcoin. It's just how that's going to happen. He goes, yeah, I'd like to debate Cody on this. We'll set it up. Well, you know, within hours, it's done. And he's like, it might not be prudent at this juncture because, you know, he has investors and other interests that just assume not, but he suggested that you come on. Awesome. We got, you know, the first leaning would be, yeah, but if Bruce comes on, he's still kind of anarchist. He agrees a lot with Cody. There would there be that much to discuss? From my standpoint, of course there was, because I've been a libertarian activist for a long time. Libertarian Party, it started off as education. We're just going to inform people. We're going to let them know that, you know, freedom's the answer. What's the question? And immediately it starts to morph into, well, we could be in charge. Let us rule you. We'll do it better. And I'm going, yeah, okay, you know, here we go again. So I it's not like I don't understand the structure or the intent or what would be the PR for having such an organization. It's just at its effective root that it even exists or negotiates with or advocates for as a for a decentralized, for a distributed technology to have some central plan for freedom, just ooh to me. And I'm just trying to, you know, get more information from those that would, you know, be part of it and advocate from that those positions of influence, what they're advocating for. And I'm and it's like, you know, join my collective, you know, against collectivism. I'm trying to see where, like, Bitcoin organization like that you have, Bruce, if that wouldn't be a more effective way of doing it, or as we've done other development projects, like with the internet and email and, you know, different search, all the technology that we've come to enjoy. I'm just wondering if the Bitcoin Foundation is in an irreparable position, or we're trying to build up its reputation. I mean, are you trying to bring some credibility to it to then do something good?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good that can be done. Something like, I mean, remember when the foundation was created, they didn't have, I mean, this concept of decentralized autonomous corporations and that kind of thing was something nobody had really heard of. And like I said, I wasn't involved in the creation, so I don't answer for anything that has happened to the foundation up to today. I had nothing to do with it. I'm the same as Cody in that respect. We don't, neither of us deserve blame for what has existed. All I'm saying is going forward, yeah, I think there is positive things you could do. I agree with Olivia Janssen's that you could have a Kickstarter-like, you know, process where it is more democratic, where you have people fund the types of development that they want to see, and other things too. If somebody says, hey, I want to send somebody over to Thailand to talk to the government or talk to the business community or whatever, you know, you can make that democratic effort where people can fund it, and if enough people fund it, you know, not all of those efforts would be something that I would agree with, but it is a more democratic way for people to do funding rather than a centralized authority that says, yes, we're going to fund this or that, or we're going to advertise here or there.
There is, from my experience in the Libertarian Party, one of the most successful fundraisers they did was full-page advertising against the drug war back in the 90s. And they said, look, you just give us money for this. You know, we're going to put ads and have, boom, tens of thousands, 100,000, I mean, it's crap loads of money flooded in. This is what we want you to do. This is what we want you to do. After a successful campaign of that, what'd they come back with? Oh, heck, man, we need you to just give us money so we can do things like that. We pinky swear, promise we're going to do that. No. I need a directed kickstarting kind of, I put it here, it goes to do that. Well, is that what's going to happen? Well, if that can happen, we'll just do Kickstarter. We'll be right back.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Okay, when we come back, this is the last segment. Give you guys an opportunity to just make whatever closing. Now, of course, after once the music starts and we go after that, we can just finish and go, and then we don't have to be in. We can go for hours for all I care. I know it's 3 hours. It goes pretty quick because of all the breaks. So and it's just a pain in the butt. But, you know, if there's anything else, anybody wants to stay or you got to go, it's fine. But it's either both of you on or not one of you over the other, because I don't think that'd be fair. But what we'll go ahead and do, we'll at least go into the news a little bit, or we'll just finish up whatever. Maybe we can do it again before the election. So I'm going to come in with a comment real quick and then just let you guys go at it. But I'll probably ask one of you to kind of give a closing statement, and then we can do responses to that, each of them. How about that?
Sure.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, here we go.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.FM.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
William Wallace, you stand in taint of high treason.
Against whom?
Against your king. Have you anything to say?
Never in my whole life did I swear allegiance to him.
It matters not. He is your king. Confess, and you may receive a quick death. Deny, and you must be purified by pain. Do you confess? Do you confess? Then on the morrow you shall receive your purification.
Yep, you're going to get purified. See, this is how I see government. It matters not. He is your king. I didn't agree to. It matters not. He is your king. This is the mentality that I think what I advocate being against. I'm going, look, I want to have the ability to just ignore him. And that's what Bitcoin's promise was. I don't think that's what the foundation is advocating. Can it? Should it? Let's ask Bruce. Bruce, can the Bitcoin Foundation be used to advocate for nobody's their king? Or do they have to represent industry that chooses to use Bitcoin in the legacy banking system? It seems like that's kind of where it's come up, and that's all it talks about, and that's who it represents, as opposed to the individual just wanting to be left alone. Can the foundation be moved in that direction? And then, if so, how? I mean, it pays the core developers. You would think there's influence there. I'm scared of that. It's like a central point of, you know, not leave me alone. Bruce?
Yeah, absolutely. I've spent years convincing people about these principles since before I was involved in Bitcoin, maybe before Bitcoin existed, actually definitely before Bitcoin existed. I think that most libertarians and anarchists were at one point statists. A lot of us have, I think even Jeffrey Tucker and other people have talked about this journey. Most people are not born, there's the old joke, everybody's born as a statist because they expect everybody else to do something for them and they cry if they don't get their way. But in seriousness, I think a lot of people are statists, at some point, and they go through a change. I served in the military. I don't agree with the military mission. I wasn't developed in my thoughts and opinions at that time. And so I'm an eternal optimist. I think in my career, I've spent a lot of time building bridges, creating connections, sometimes very difficult things, doing deals with people. And I spend a lot of time trying to convince people and show them and ask them hard questions that make them sometimes have cognitive dissonance, sometimes question their own philosophy. When I say, what gives you the moral right to hurt somebody? Some people haven't even about the state as being a force. They don't even think of taxes as a violent act. And I don't always succeed, but I have succeeded in some cases about getting people to think and doing it in a diplomatic way. So I don't see any reason why I couldn't continue to do that if I was on the board of the foundation. I do it already right now, talking to all kinds of people. And it doesn't always work. Some people are hopeless, but I think that that's how you get people to change their mind.
At Bitcoin Foundation's foundation is a belief, you know, if I hear you right, that, you know, people are always looking for somebody to do something for them, and they kind of start off being statist. I have four children and six grandchildren, and I'll tell you, the first two words they know is no and freaking mine, okay? That's mine and no. So I'm kind of feeling a little anarchy, and of course, what we support, and the advocacy that Cody is doing, I'm wondering how it supports that, or Cody, help me out here. I'm wondering what's the best, you know, method. We had this debate, you know, for people to be able, in light of this new technology, to claim mine and know. And is the Bitcoin Foundation going to help with that?
I think it should be clear, if it hadn't been already by now, that the Bitcoin Foundation is without a purpose at this point. It's actually struggling to find some reason for reference, some constituency to represent, because the industry doesn't want to use it as an interface anymore for government. And it doesn't represent any industry players of any significance any longer like it did with Mt. Gox. And so it's decided to repurpose itself as a libertarian organization that focuses on core development. Well, if you were going to build that kind of organization from the beginning, at the outset, it wouldn't look like what it looks like now, which is a 501c6 industrial lobby organized with a board of directors that can pursue policy objectives. Like this is not how you build a open standards-making organization. It's completely antithetical to that, in fact, and it's kind of comical to watch it struggle to come up with a way to excuse its existence. It seems to be just anathema to me because we're so comfortable with organizations. Look how easily we can talk about anti-statism and libertarianism, but instead look at our unstated comfort and just kind of unassumed comfort with large organizations in these forms. My point in all of this is that form matters. Form deeply, deeply matters. Even if you're a bureaucrat and you're apologetic for your role in the world, it doesn't matter if you have all the intention in the world. The form is stronger than the subjectivity.
You know, that's a Bruce comment on that. That's a good point, to where you have the structure itself is set up for industry lobbying. I mean, everything, the way it has advocated in the news, the people involved, the things said, it seems like it was designed with that intent from the beginning.
Yeah, and I'd like to change a lot of that. I don't think everything it's done has been bad, but I would like to change a lot of that. With the Bitcoin Association, we didn't get the 501c3 status or any other government status. We didn't get permission from anybody. We didn't become incorporated. We don't have an official location or office. So I definitely see the value of that. It probably wouldn't have been my choice to go and subject yourself to all kinds of new oversight by, you know, filing these forms that some people bureaucrat tells us we should file to get permission to act as a group.
So you advocate for that elimination, or morph it into your organization and you pay core developers, and how open it? You see my point?
I don't have any intention to morph it into the organization that I did. I mean, that's definitely not a goal, but I would be, as a board member, if somebody made a motion to dissolve the 501c3 status. If they wanted to dissolve that status, I'd have to think about it a little bit and think about what the plan is. But yeah, I'd be in favor of that kind of thing in principle, for sure. I would rather be less, tied with the government and a lot of these things that the foundation has done, I'm not happy with, and I don't think represent us.
The comment that you and Cody share a lot of the same ideology and are close and can articulate the same points and everything, that was something that was brought up before doing this show. Well, they're kind of on the same side. Not really. You know, I do you think you guys are or aren't, and what's the difference?
I think we'd like to be. I think we have a general disposition of suspicion of regulatory power and state power, and in that sense, surely we see ourselves as fellow travelers. But yeah, in terms of method, and I can say that we're quite different.
Yeah, I mean, if you put us in a the audience at a Rolling Stone concert with 100,000 people, ideological, there's probably five people that are as similar as Cody and I are in terms of overall philosophy. But so compared to the rest of the world, yeah, I think we're similar. But on this particular thing, we're running against each other. We do have a very different vision. I don't at this stage advocate disbanding the foundation. I would rather try and fix it and have it work. So that's
Why?
A pretty radical difference.
Why? Why?
It's a core of Cody's.
Why? Point. Why fix it? I mean, why?
It's a matter of focus of you know what we want to spend our energy on right now. You know, like I said, this is what I started to say before the break. I hope this works, and I've bet a lot on it. But it is not a certainty that this technology is going to work. Great ideas don't always work because they're great ideas. The Tucker was a better automobile, and it was crushed. I want to see this work, and hand in hand go with that goes. You know, the things that companies are doing.
You mentioned Tucker, and I want to make sure the audience knows. Tucker was a automobile after World War II that came in. You might as well just say Elon Musk. And Elon Musk, they tried to do the same thing, you know, to Elon that they did to Tucker. But he was a victim of the systems, all the systems. That was the kind of the point. And I'm going, here we have technology that is not subjective to the system. I mean, it's outside. The heck can be done with outer net satellite to, you know, freaking kids in Congo. So I'm just, the technology allows us to be, we're going to continue the conversation until everybody's done. You know, so you go to the archive. It's been Cody Wilson and Bruce Fenton running for the Bitcoin Foundation board. Now, this is, I'm hoping we got something out of this. We got to understand a little bit more how it works. We got to understand a little bit more of the criticism for what it's been doing. But I think there is a distinction. You know, we're either going to be working with, educating, trying to bring regulators around, or not. You know, and my question continues to be, does Bitcoin care either way? I will keep asking that very question. Thanks for tuning in. Go to the archive. There's a lot more. There we go. Okay, now this the vast majority of people that will listen to this show is going to be archived anyway. You know, so that's just, you know, get over it. But the what we'll go ahead and do is I'll let you guys go ahead and make whatever closing statements here and then whatever conversation ensues. Bruce, you want to go first or second? What do you want to do? Cody, go for it. He hesitated.
I mean, we can just make it a conversation now, man. I mean, it does.
Well, I just want you to kind of sum it up, you know, right now, well, like at the end of the show, and then we'll just talk.
A big point that I never really found an opening for on the show is that, like, I disagree with the assumption that the technologies need advanced party groups to clear the way for them. I see how that might, you could perceive that to be beneficial, but superior technologies, and especially like in economic terms, superior monies, don't need organizations to apologize or advocate on their behalf. Peer's law, the inverse aggression's law, just says good money beats out bad money just by virtue of it being good money. All these global reserve currencies ended up kind of taking their occupied positions, not because they had a superior brand management and advocacy groups, but because they were literally superior monies in most cases, especially in terms of the petrodollar, right? I mean, you had all that force and might behind it. You had something of an order of magnitude more powerful in the pound sterling than anything that came before it as well. These were economic factors and people's willingness to hoard and stash and speculatively attack weaker currencies that brought these currencies to bear, not superior brand management and a K Street lobby. You know what I mean?
Bruce, go ahead. I got several questions, but go ahead and sum up what you're hoping to get across over the last year.
Yeah, I agree that it is not needed. A superior technology doesn't need it, but I guess where we disagree is that I think it can be beneficial. If the advocacy that I've done as an individual or with the Bitcoin Association could just as easily be done with the Bitcoin Foundation, and I think that does help. I've gone to Saudi Arabia, which is a very heavy-handed, very statist government that is the type of place that would ban something like this, and I've talked to people, and suppose hypothetically that my actions could get them to not ban it. I think that's a victory. I think that's better than to say, sure, go ahead and ban it. We don't care. We'll fight you. We're anarchists viva revolution. I just think it's more effective if you can get somebody to say, hey, look, this isn't that bad. It's not the kind of technology that you thought. In fact, it goes in line with some of your core principles that you say that you believe in, and get them to be, allies or neutral to it. I just think it's a better method than going out. I'm not afraid of a fight. I'll fight regulators in those cases where they do ban it, but I'd much rather get them to not ban it in the first place.
You know, I've been an activist for a long time and run for Congress and U.S. Senate and legislature and secretary. I mean, on and on and on out there. I don't vote, but, you know, I'll certainly advocate for having an opinion. The the thing is, whenever they bring that up, you don't even vote. I go, thank you for bringing that up. And they go, dumb reporter, didn't you get the memo? Never ask her any of that question. So I'm looking at voting in this process, and the voting is by members of this small community that from the beginning was set up to educate, to work with regulators, to do the core development, to pay. I'm wondering if you had a competing organization that from its onset decided that they were going to also pay developers whatever you pay and a dollar. You know, that we want some say too, and how would that influence what they do? I'm wondering what kind of influence the foundation has that goes with a paycheck. I mean, it can't be zero.
Look, the foundation has Garzik and Gavin and all these guys. I mean, I don't believe that you've solved the problem of foundation with a competitive foundation. Basically, I want to question the whole supposition that we had to enclose or cloister Gavin and company this way.
My point in that is that the foundation, when they go, damn it, somebody else is paying them, we got to have, you know, more influence, more control in the core, and I'm wondering what that influence is.
What the actual, the organizational influence of the core
is? No, I mean, see, this is, I want to make this clear, you know, now that we don't have, you know, time constraints, I want to make this one point. My big thing has always been, if they, them, those, government, you know, those that just want to be left alone, those that just won't leave them alone. I mean, it's no more complicated than that. And I'm going, the people that won't leave me alone, if they can maintain, enhance, expand their intrusiveness, control, power over the individual, they are. I mean, it's real simple. If they can, they are. So I go, all right, so Bitcoin in its core development, can they change Bitcoin with the support of the Bitcoin Foundation and the interest of the miners and their 50+1%? And all that? I mean, can they create some change that is not what the original intent of Satoshi was? You know, I'm going, can they? Well, if they
not
can,
really.
They are. So I just need to know that. So then I ask Cody and I say, why Bitcoin? Why don't you just do another one? Why don't you just do a alternative kind of what? He goes, nope, it's Bitcoin. I mean, years ago, he goes, nope, Bitcoin. Bitcoin is it. Why? Well, because it is. Okay. So for whatever reason, he gave a lot of good reasons, I'm sure. But the point is that, okay, we're locked on Bitcoin, and I need to understand the control and the influence that the foundation has by writing a check to the people that are writing the code.
The pull requests are basically still consensual. I mean, if you're going to make a major change to that code base, to the code base that is quote unquote Bitcoin, it still has to be supported by, you know, an overwhelming majority of miners and people running the code. So I mean, you can't just kind of lob some grenade and hope everybody gets, you know, hope you get away with it. But at the same time, you can have an accretion of gradual changes, which you can just assume that there's a kind of general respect for, where you can lay a foundation for activities, or you can steer toward or drift toward directions which aren't otherwise intentionally or consensually derived by the people. So the foundation claims it has stewardship, but there's really been no effective stewardship. And two, there's been no transparency into this process at all, because the developer mailing lists are private, and they constitute a large hierarchy where the community itself doesn't actually get to reflect its will in the pull pushes. That's all I'm trying to say.
Is that a good, legitimate concern right there, Bruce?
That somebody can co-opt the foundation and therefore co-opt the code?
Well, I mean, it's a gradual kind of, well, this is good for Bitcoin. This kind of little line of code here is not that bad. This one, and all the miners go, yeah, whatever, we don't care. And kind of, and eventually it just morphs into the very thing that we were hoping to get away from.
Yeah, well, I think you the question seems to be based on this premise that you kind of have the industry on the, you know, the industry players on one side and the individuals on the other side.
Yes.
And one's trying to screw the other. But I don't see it that way. I don't see Coinbase.
Their interests are definitely different, Bruce. I mean, come on, man. You got to throw me that bone. I mean,
all right. So explain what thing that you would see Coinbase, for example, pushing that would harm you and your liberty.
My identity.
No, this one's pretty easy. Coinbase just got in trouble because of its interests for closing down user accounts, deleting access, freezing funds,
But do you think that they chose to do that? Is that something they wanted to do, or is that something they were told to do by the government?
Now, I pressed their investors, and actually, yes, this was voluntary effort. They weren't even compelled to do this. They did this to show that they have an abundance of precaution when it comes to know your customer. So
right,
literally, the answer is yes.
Because they're under pressure from the government.
Literally, the answer is yes.
Yeah, see,
they weren't even compelled to do it.
Right, of course. I know. I've been regulated as an investment person for 22 years. I know how it works. I mean, you don't sit around a smoke filled room and say, "Hey, let's screw the customer." You say, "Let's make it so we don't go to jail. Let's go overboard on what these jerks are asking for, and protect ourselves." And that's them reacting to an unfortunate situation of bad regulation and a bad regulatory environment and heavy-handed government. It's not something that they decided to do because they wanted to screw people. It's something that they were doing because of bad government situation and bad regulation.
I think the apologetics are too. This is too one-dimensional in the apologetics, though. They could have built simple procedures where they didn't have to know as much information about the customers as they did in the beginning. They didn't do this. I'm not just arguing a counterfactual. What I'm trying to say is Coinbase's interests are now directly opposed to my interests as a libertarian holding Bitcoin. They want to know things about me. They want to know, in many cases, more things about me.
I don't think they want to know. I think the government wants to know.
Oh, see, and Coinbase is
there's no difference in the end. It's irrelevant, is what I'm trying to say. Like, formally, Coinbase's interests are now divergent from my own.
This is one thing, Bruce. I give you a perfect example, my own personal case.
I think there is a difference, though. I think you didn't want to file a license to become a firearms dealer. You didn't want to. You didn't wake up one day and say, I'm Cody Wilson, the anarchist. I really love the idea of filing for a license. You didn't do that because you wanted to.
Bruce, the answer to that is because my industry was given over to government by the NRA, the Gun Advocacy Foundation.
Yeah, I'll give you that one.
Yeah, I agree. And the NRA.
Let's promote the Bitcoin Foundation, everybody.
The NRA is responsible for a lot of the gun regulation, which was driven by racism because they were scared of civil rights people who were black going and marching on the.
Oh no, I'm talking in recent history, Bruce. We have an organization called SAFE. Second Amendment is for everyone. Are you a safe legislator, an unsafe, congressman, that kind of thing? Since 93, 94, we've been doing this, and I could see what was happening. It was congressmen and state legislators would come to. Well, the NRA said it was okay as long as the background check was instant. The NRA said, and I can see exactly the same thing is going to come and go, well, the Bitcoin Foundation said, and I'm going, you're confusing me with someone that gives a crap what they said. I'm looking at, does the tech protect me? Either it does or it doesn't. Well, it doesn't, and it was never meant to protect those that were interfacing with a legacy banking system. But that's what they're looking for, is that kind of protection. What do I need? Well, I recently, when Bitcoin went under $300, because I announced, I'm like, hey, when it goes under $300, I'm going to start buying some more. So I traded in some silver for Bitcoin at 270, whatever. All of a sudden, the few days, it goes down to 170. So I go, you know what? I want to buy me some more. Can I average it out, So I go, then I want to buy. Well, nobody wants to sell it, of course. So I had some friends need some money. What do I get? A little bit. All right. So I'm pretty open. I'll go through. Yeah, know your customer. Hell, everybody knows, and I know. I sure as hell don't advocate for it. I don't use encryption. I don't use encrypted phone, encrypted email, encrypted. I don't, use Tor. I don't, because I just know better to put myself under, because I don't understand it enough. They're going to find out anyway, and I'm very open. So what I do is I go, okay, up at Consumer Electronics Show, I saw Circle there. They see a nice guy. I go, okay, let's go see what's up. I go up to the Circle. I want to, right now, just out of principle, I want to get me some freaking Bitcoin today. What do I got to do? What do I got to give up? Social security number, address, know your command, anal freaking probe. And I go, all right, so for me to get Bitcoin and deal with the legacy banking system, though, I'm going to give them dollars and get it. Man, did they have a bunch of forms for me to fill out. It was no secret. I guarantee it. And that industry, for them to exist and do exactly what they do, they have to, pony up and say, yes, sir, and how high. Now, BitInstant, years ago when we did this, it was cash, wire, transfer, silver. Right. Done. And the man did not like that one bit.
Yeah. I mean, I've fought these guys for my whole life. I mentioned that, I mean, you mentioned in the intro that I founded the first full service investment firm on the internet. How did I do that? It wasn't because I was some kind of Vitalik-like computer genius. It was because I took I had the courage to go against the regulators in a very uncertain regulatory environment. Back in 1994, when I founded Atlantic Financial, there was a lot of questions about, can you be an investment firm on the internet? Can you do this? Is it legal? Can you offer investment advice? And on and on and on and on. And I just went ahead and did it. And so I personally, if I was CEO of Coinbase, I would do things differently. I would do the same thing I've done my whole career, which is push the regulations as much as possible, or better yet, now with this new technology, I'd rather ignore them. That's why I go to different jurisdictions like Dubai, because I want to be under as little of the thumb of these people as possible. And even better, if I might create a company that's entirely anonymous, nobody even knows that I'm involved with it, and be completely off the grid. That's just my personality.
But illegal!
I understand
allowed.
That the companies that do this are not doing it because they hate the people; they're doing it because of fear.
No, and because they're in that position to do it. See, that's one thing I saw Bitcoin bypassed. I don't have to do that. We just traded them amongst each other, and I go to, $1,500 limit ATMs that, be semi-legal until they're not. But it's so scary to they, them, those that won't leave us alone. Now we have entire country, Great Britain, encryption is illegal. Of course, crossbows to cryptography. You're not allowed to be able to defend against the man. I understand this. I'm trying to see, I need to have confidence. I want to ask both of you this simple question. Is Bitcoin in its current form and hopefully in future form secure? I mean, can I, with ease and being careful, expect to be anonymous if I make the effort?
No, you shouldn't. You shouldn't. And to have that expectation is unreasonable anyway. I mean, you're dealing with a digital technology on the NSA's playing ground with a public ledger. I mean, no, you're not going to have that level of security that you're trying to define for yourself. Now, we would like to have that kind of security, and we'd like to advocate for it, but we're dealing with powers and principalities which are working actively for that not to happen. And I guess my criticism of the foundation, the biggest bright line is that allowing any access at all, or facilitating any access at all of the state form back to Bitcoin, however innocuous it may seem, is not fundamentally anti-statist, and does not begin to approach. So a lot of the conversation stopping that happens with arguments here is that Bruce says, well, look, but there are regulators. Yeah, well, how do we get rid of regulators? And it's not from having conversations with them. It's from doing the purposeful, serious work of trying to weed out the manifestation of the state in our technologies and in our lives. If we don't actively have that intentionality in our organizations, then it comes back to us.
Bruce?
Yeah, I think there's several ways to get rid of regulators, and we look at where it's happened before. What was it, the Interstate Transportation Safety Board or something like that? You used to have to have all the trucks weighed when they were driving down the highway. It was this massive bureaucracy, and it was eliminated during the Reagan administration. People said, oh my, it's going to be horrible without this regulator. You're going to have trucks driving off the road, and people are going to die. And they were radically against it. I mean, you can get rid of regulators. I think what Cody is talking about is one way to do that. Technology is a great way to do it. Make it so that it's impossible to do that. Decrease their authority, marginalize them, laugh at them. There's many, many things in history. A well-placed political cartoon in history can have an impact. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that things can have an impact historically. It used to be the court jester back in the days when it wasn't even allowed to have a political cartoon, which could actually create change. There are a lot of different ways to create change. Some are more effective than others. I think we can. There's a lot of different things we can do.
Cody,
I think your optimism is nice. I find by and large, you said nothing completely offensive to me, and I hope at no point in our earlier debate did I offend you either. But that optimism to me seems to elide the bigger problem, which is that in your own career as a financial professional, have you seen mega statism in recess or waxing? And the answer must be obvious. I mean, now the financial system itself is a closed loop used in foreign affairs and treasury battles to treasury designations in the post 9/11 era. I mean, the system is becoming more restrictive, as we all know, not less. And 20 years of fighting these people in your own terms doesn't yield you the kind of fruits that you're advocating with your optimism.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, it's amazing. I am optimistic after 20 years. I mean, it's gotten much worse. When I started in this business, in the investment, I shouldn't say this business, I'm not super active in the investment business anymore, but when I started in the investment business, you could open an account at Morgan Stanley over the phone with no signature and no ID. You could just call up and you could actually buy stocks as long as you paid within a week. It was 5 business days. So you could call up a broker and say, hi, my name's John Smith. I want to buy 1,000 shares of Microsoft. And you could actually do that over the phone without signing anything and without your ID. And as long as you paid within a week, you'd be okay. And if you didn't pay, the people who worked in operations would kind of remember your name and hopefully figure out who you were. You know, now we are in a situation where if you're Amish, you can barely even open an account because you need an ID and all of these other mm-hmm. ridiculous AML and KYC and anti-money laundering and all of this other stuff that, you know, is completely statist and completely anti-freedom and anti-business.
I see that this is a psyop. You know, against and for regulation. It's going to be, oh, look what they did, and they used Bitcoin to blow up the fill in the blank. You know, I mean, it's always U.S. dollars and in cash. So I'm going, you want to see, you know, drug dealing, terrorism, and all kinds of other stuff. It's, you know, these guys, and oftentimes from agents of the government, you know, funneling it through of whatever, kill the messenger. I mean, you know, it's just, I can't even, as 25 years doing this, I can't even keep count of how many times I've seen something just like the Bitcoin Foundation metastasize as its original intent. And certainly people that would have control over it or use it. So I'm just going, I'm hoping that we can, you know, free humanity, you know, by the technology that's coming. But it's us that keeps putting our head on the chopping block. It's us that allows this kind of, you know, morphing into something. It's us that does it. It's us. So that's why I like having these discussions, so that we can see, what was the kernel, the seed, the core ideology or perspective that allowed this? When I saw your bio, Bruce, and, you know, 22 years ago, you're younger than me now, you know, so I would imagine you're under 53, you know, yeah. Or you're damn good looking 53. So I'm going, you know, so
I'm 42.
So 42, that means, you know, as a young 20 something year old, I mean, you probably still in college or just got out if you even went. I mean, all of a sudden you're out and you're doing investment banking, investment financial service, something on the internet. Well, this brand new spanky kind of what the heck is an internet? So by doing that, you could see the advancement that had, and it still, they didn't know how to regulate. I remember hearings on regulating hardware. The modems must be such and such and only be as fast as, it's too late, it's already way past that. So I'm just going, now they have the libertarian perspective is that nothing should be illegal. If you possess something, whatever it is you possess is not illegal just by you possessing something. And the reason was for just this kind of thing. You're not aggressing against anyone. You're not, it may be evidence of a crime, maybe evidence of your immorality, maybe evidence or whatever, but just possessing something is not bad. Well, they want to change that. That whole mindset is because what can be done with Bitcoin without the overseer seeing us, that inherently makes it evil. So when you got someone that's advocating openly for a dark wallet, yep, I'm a money launderer, want to launder, make it squeaky clean money, man. We're going to do it as a freedom thing, advocating for that without being afraid. I look to the Bitcoin Foundation. Are they going to take a position at any time to where the anonymity of the individual is the goal, is preferable, is better than what we have now? Can they? See, I don't see them ever openly making that, certainly as an organization to the regulators, is that the freedom of the individual to do whatever they want is not only is it not regulatable and we don't want it to be, it shouldn't be. Can the foundation make that point and still maintain its existence?
Yeah, I think they can. I mean, there's all kinds of organizations that make points and stands that are against what the government thinks is acceptable. I mean, normal started, people thought they were absolutely insane. It was the concept of legalizing or decriminalizing marijuana was just an absolutely baffling thought. There's advocacy groups that when they first started calling for legalization of gay marriage. People thought that was completely crazy.
You know, let me inject. This is a perfect point.
You can take things. I mean, I would if I won a board seat, I would absolutely push for the foundation to have an official stance for anonymity.
Normal came in. I've been dealing with them for 20 years. And you have, here they come in and they'll say, well, we don't want to just decriminalize or make it, you know, it's a weed, it's ragweed, it's dandelions, you know, we don't care. You know, it's like, well, we're going to work with regulators and law enforcement and how we're going to regulate it. And here, I just had the state director and national director on the show, and initiative that they're going to be doing this year, they're looking to get law enforcement's cooperation by finding in an initiative a revenue stream to replace the money they lose in the drug war. And I go, are you freaking kidding me? I'm worried about how much money they're... See, this is exactly what I'm talking about. This, you create an organization, and sooner or later, the organization becomes more important than the reason you created it. And the NRA, well, as long as it's an instant background check. This happens. I'm glad that we had this discussion, because this is at its fundamental core. Can the Bitcoin Foundation, as an organization that, oh, by the way, you know, writes a check that the guy is doing it, and I'm going, can they, and interface with regulators and represent the industry that's, you know, got SWAT teams ready to jump on if they don't jump when they are told to, can they provide the position, the character, the perspective that Bitcoin was at its core promising to advocate for? See, that's my question. And Cody's run is to what? Cody, how do you play into that?
I think the answer is self-evident, but I don't know how you want me to answer it. I mean, we've seen it play for 2 years now, okay? I mean, now I'm only trying to take its own word. And its own word that's failed as a lobbying effort and as a harmonizer and an interface with government. Now it's apologetic and wants to just focus on Cordes. Well, if you want to do that, the track record, right, since 86 shows that the most successful open standards organizations, namely the IETF, and its collections of RFCs for SMTP, like, show that you don't do it with a private membership club with a board of directors and a private hierarchy of core developers. You do it with a truly open standard process with open source principle. That's not at all what this foundation is and what it hopes to achieve. And so I'm accusing it of either bad faith or of not being serious in its mission. I'd like to level it and start over.
Okay, Bruce, I'll give you I think we, you know, kind of covered it and got each other's position, but please respond to what's been discussed here in the last couple of minutes.
Yeah, I think we've pretty much covered it, but I still hold out hope. I'm not afraid of a fight. I'm not afraid to challenge things. I'm not afraid to demand documents and ask for documents. I think that my track record on that, the things that I've said publicly and done publicly for in Bitcoin and for a long time, make that clear. And I, I'm not afraid to challenge them and meaningful change and demand that real and meaningful change. But I just do hold out hope as an optimist that it can be fixed. And I think the best efforts for all of us to do now is spend our time building something and fixing something, because we're in a small space that the certainty of the future is by no means guaranteed.
Okay, why do you say that? You know, it's always, well, it's not guaranteed. Tech's not sure. We got, and when I was at Consumer Electronics Show talking to some of the guys in the industry, I started to feel more comments like that, more doubt, as if it depended on something. What?
Well, it depends what you define as success. Where I would like to see Bitcoin is a I would like to see much more adoption. I mean, we talk about in our community, there's a lot of people who talk about this replacing governments, replacing currencies, making banks obsolete. We are way, way, way away from that. The entire size of all Bitcoin on planet Earth right now is a rounding error on one day's balance sheet for one bank. Let's be realistic. If we want this to work, we're going to need, and a lot of people don't like to talk about the price. They don't like to talk. They say, oh, the technology is more important than the market cap. I disagree with that, because the price goes hand in hand with adoption. If we want to be a real player in the global economy, we need to be, half the size of a broken third world economy currency, and we're not there yet. We're not the size of Bangladesh.
This is the point about changing the world right now.
I hope we get there. I really do. But we're not there yet, and it could fizzle. And if the price of the coin continues to drop or goes way down, and we see venture capital investment dry up, and we see these companies like Coinbase and BitPay disintegrate, then that doesn't bode well for our technology. It would be something that we all sit around talking about. Wow, wouldn't it have been cool? And there would be a tiny, tiny handful of 10,000 people who still trade things in Bitcoin. That's not what I want. I want this to change the world and completely disrupt old systems. And to do that, it needs to be a lot larger.
Cody?
By the way, I'm going through TSA in a second, but I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave. I want to keep talking, but you might hear me like get killed or something. Like how I want to answer this is like we shouldn't just be looking. This seems to be like a theological foundation for some of this. Like we want to see reflect to us signs of Bitcoin's election as, you know, like the anointed currency or something. If my point is like, look, if this is superior technology, this stuff comes through no matter what. It doesn't matter what the market cap is. What matters more is what you're able to do with it. Can you really be anonymous with it? Can you really elude some of these government agents? Can you actually do some of these things that you hope to be able to do with it? And if you can, then it doesn't matter what the price is. The application, you know, wins the day.
Can I take my Bitcoin, I get silver, change it into Bitcoin, go to, you know, Central America, wherever, and get my silver? I mean, that's all can I use it? So I'm working at, when you're talking about changing the world, Bruce, I don't even have a metric for that and don't care. I want to know if it can change my world. You know, that's all I want to know. Can it change my world?
Yeah, and part of that ability to go and buy that silver is people understanding what it is and being willing to accept it, which is driven also by companies like BitPay who get thousands of merchants. So it is easier for you to go there and use it. And it's driven by technologies that makes it easier for you to convert your fiat into Bitcoin and have other people relate and have a more robust network and people who do things from, you know, designing paper wallets and any number of other things that help in this system. So I think Bitcoin would be worse off if we took, you know, BitPay, Coinbase, Circle, the top 20 recipients of venture capital and wiped them from planet Earth. I think Bitcoin would be worse.
Well, that's I'm not willing to sacrifice my individual freedom for them to have a good balance sheet.
But you keep saying that, but it's not an either or thing. I don't advocate anything that sacrifices your freedom in favor of them.
Hey, I'm going to do an opt out. I'm not. Okay. I'm going to keep talking to you guys while they, you know, I've never been scanned by one of these things.
Me neither. I just, me and my wife, it's like opt out. We get a foursome going. It's all good.
Look, Bruce's point about capital investment. No question. Now we're starting to argue counterfactuals. Is Bitcoin better because it's had millions of dollars in incredible development efforts? Yes, obviously you could do all kinds of things with it. I don't think it's an either or, but also in the other direction, it's not superior just because it's had these capital investments, and we can easily conceive alternative historical scenarios where it was developed in other ways. I'm not trying to act like at the same time that what happened is irrelevant or that it was unnecessary or even not valuable. Obviously, Bitcoin is more interesting technically and more powerful because of the money and the talent and all the people doing things in it right now. It's just there's this unchecked statism. Let me do this screening, and I'll get right back to you, okay?
Okay. Bruce, I it kind of really has come out, you know, in our conversation where the focus is. And I remember at our Freedom Summit back in February, Paul Snow was here, Rafael Rodriguez. We had Cody Wilson, Patrick Byrne, Davi Barker, Bitcoin Up Bombs, MK Lords, Drew Felton. I mean, there was a lot of discussion. And I could see the advocacy for Bitcoin was that wide adoption was the goal. That's what was going to save us, not the tech. It was and not, you know, how much the government did or didn't regulate. It's that the solution was a lot of people using it, that its price go up. That was the goal. And then I even heard arguments for such things as, well, if the price goes up, well, all of us will be filthy, stinking rich and we'll, you know, fund more liberty projects, and wouldn't that be a good thing? Kind of, I even heard that. I go, I just want to be left alone. I want to be able to do what I want to do. So I'm looking at the tech side. Well, in conversations with a lot of guys, and I think Andreas Antonopoulos, I'll be on tomorrow, he talked about this with me at length, and he said the anonymity and the autonomy and the uses that you have for Bitcoin, Ernie, are going to come at application of the wallet. It's going to be at the wallet level that this is done. So, okay, well, I start looking for, you know, good wallets and so on. I find some that I'm comfortable with. But the thing is that I'm going, wow, governments after this France thing in Paris, you have Durka Jihad. They come in and kill, and we see. And if we only had more surveillance and eliminated encryption on communication, then this wouldn't have happened. And therefore, we're going to pass a law. So I'm looking at all the regulation in the world is not going to change the fact that they're taking more freedom away from me. And if somebody's not advocating for that, if they're not advocating for leave me aloneist technology, then I'm like, are they just simply on the other side? You know, they're representing industry or the people that want to work with the legacy system so they can make gazillions of dollars and then sell the information at, you know, $200 million and what everybody did that was there that they gave over. You see, I'm just, I see all this centralization always as the death knell for individual freedoms. I mean, it always has been. So I'm not seeing any difference.
Well, if we look at the internet, which is you know, that's this amazing technical revolution and has done a lot of good in the world, I think that it's good that a lot of people use the internet. So I really do see adoption hand in hand with success of this technology. Yeah, the technology is great, but like Cody just said, the technology becomes better because more people are putting money and time and effort into developing it. And I think that its utility is hand in hand with adoption. I want to see this be huge. I want it to be where almost anywhere you go, anywhere Why? In the world, you can use Bitcoin and have it really give a chance to run against the banks. I just don't see, how Bitcoin is going to destroy you know, Goldman Sachs if it's the same size that it is now. I just don't see how that's possible, and I'm not content with where Bitcoin is now. I'd like to see it larger.
I just feel like the cart is before the horse a little bit here. Everybody agrees that, oh well, we want a moment where Bitcoin undermines and subverts all the preconceived orders, but I mean, you don't have to cheerlead it to do that. You have to actually build and do the hard work and the heavy lifting for the actual subversion. Nobody wants to be that. Everybody wants to create like Jansen's idea. Well, let's do a super crowdfunding Carnival Bitcoin Foundation. I mean, it's a joke. Like, that's not serious. You don't need to organize all these meta layers of promotion of the technology. You just need to do that work. No one's doing that work. They want to organize. They want to advocate. It's like everybody wants on the bandwagon. Nobody wants to pull it, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, and I think that goes hand in hand with size. There's a lot more developers now because there's more money in it, and because of I mean, the price has not been good the last year, but I mean, because of the price overall over a 2-year, 3-year trend, you know, I think those things do affect it. I mean, suppose Bitcoin goes down to 100, stays at 100 for 5 years, that I think goes hand in hand with how successful this is at doing the global disruption that we want to see.
Well, what's the price?
It seemed to me that Bitcoin was kicking ass at $9 and $12. I mean, Silk Road was just on fire. Now we can all say, well, maybe it was all already, the fix was in, everybody was going to take the Silk Road down, but we were doing important political things regardless of the price of Bitcoin. I understand you think a large market mover or market maker is more disruptive in some larger sense. Like, I can't disagree with you, maybe in like those broader tones, but look, man, the idea that mom and pop adopting it is somehow instrumental and it's disruptive. This is just not the case. After it is disruptive, mom and dad adopt it anyway.
But it already is disruptive, but they don't know about it yet.
it's not already disruptive enough. You see what I'm saying? Because if the speculative attack is successful enough, then they're getting Bitcoin. I mean, they're forced to get Bitcoin because all their currency is bad. Because they don't want to hold dollars.
Yeah, see, this is
how are we going to make their currency bad with something that only has a market cap of $6 billion?
No. See, this is a good point right here.
It's not significant in the global financial world, unfortunately.
Okay, significant. What defines significant? Volume?
In terms of size compared to other
things.
Okay,
why?
Because it's too small now. It's new.
Okay. See, my thing is, I never looked at that side to compete with, you know, hell, even the BRICS to come and compete with Western banks. That's going to be interesting. So I'm just going, you know, China, you know, all these other new currencies. And I started to see, it was a white black Bitcoin argument. You white Bitcoin, black Bitcoin, Ernest Hancock article come up. And I'm looking at, I'm going, I see what the BRICS are. They're just competition, but they're, it's kind of a fake. In July, they met in India and we had, individuals live from the Skype from India talking about the meeting that they did. You know, long story short was this. I got the impression that the BRICS really are negotiating for a leather chair at the mahogany table along with the Western banking. You know, they hold the International Monetary Fund, you know, the World Bank. They go, look, we don't like the way you're doing it, so we're going to do it over here. And, oh, by the way, we could be enticed to get a chair at your table. Well, they see Bitcoin as competing currency, but not from, you know, jurisdiction shopping or anything. It's just people. And it's just, and the more it goes that way, the more wide world of adoption you're going to get. That is my belief and the philosophy under which I would operate. There are others that believe, no, wide adoption comes from a government permission slip, or at least they're not going to shoot you, or threat of death, dying, and destruction. So if we operate, that's why we use the Morpheus opening here. You know, we're not afraid. We remember that which matters most. We are not afraid, and we're still here. So I'm going, is anybody advocate for that? I'm just looking, and if it's always about wide adoption, is the government saying it's okay for me to be, you know, separate from them or secret or anonymous, or, and then we already lost before we started. I don't see that.
Well,
as
I hope you don't think that's my point of view. I said that I'm in favor of adoption, but I'm not. But in no time did I say that adoption means a government permission slip.
Okay, I'm.
Hey, how about this? So instead of a positive adoption scenario, think of the negative one. Cyprus comes to mind. The currency crises that will be inevitable in Europe, especially after Greece blows its wad again. Also, look, we saw the S&P blow that whole forex handle, whatever, with the Swiss franc and all that stuff. I mean, these things are just going to happen as central banks lose their nerve. We want a currency that's impervious to political planning. Hey, look, we've got one. There's all kinds of scenarios where you just have to. As long as you're just building sound technology, you don't have to worry about this cheerleading advocacy nonprofit industrial lobby side of things. Just build the money that you want to be your money. And you don't have to worry about the market cap. The rest of that comes, you know, because the innovators and the disruptors, the early adopters, do the important things with it. I would argue, and this is difficult to show, but I think we all might recognize that it's true, I would argue probably the majority of development in Bitcoin now is superfluous or even harmful or even just a manifestation of all the malinvestment that's permissible in Bitcoin, because all these VCs are flush with cash. Everybody's just cowboying out there trying to get some VC money for purposelessness Bitcoin technology that doesn't actually help us at all. So, I mean, it's not clear that the overwhelming amount of development just is by itself showing some utility.
See, a lot of this utility, I'm coming from, I've been screaming for the grandma adjust button, Bruce. I mean, I'm just going, look, I have all the guys on, you know, like Anonymous Bitcoin, you know, Christoph Atlas gets up. Well, you know, this is how and the adjust button, you adjust this and you adjust that. I look at my keyboard and I go, where's that adjust button everybody keeps talking about? And then you have them do it and it's like, you know, 47 keystrokes till you get to the first page of whatever. And I go, whoa. We need a grandma adjust button. Who am I thinking of? My wife. You know, I'm going, I just had, without giving, you know, kind of props to any one particular wallet, I just had, you know, one wallet that I felt comfortable about to put on her phone. That is wide adoption. It wasn't a freaking stinking piece of paper by anybody.
Probably in front.
No, I never said it was a piece of paper. I mean, absolutely. I of course, it's not a government permission slip, but it is adoption is important. That wallet was most likely developed by somebody who funded it, whether an individual or an early adopter or a venture capital firm. And that kind of thing is what I'm talking about. The more investment that comes in there, and that goes hand in hand with price. That's why it is significant. If the price falls a lot and stays down, there's going to be a lot less investment. You're going to have, I mean, what were the guys just last week? They had an exchange and they left and closed the door of their exchange to do a Netflix app. We don't want to see that. We don't want to see a brain drain where we have all these brilliant people who've joined the space who say, wow, I, you know, if they can't make any money and there's no investment and there's no way for them to pay their bills and the coins that they own are down, then they're not going to be doing all of these cool things that make it easier when you have and by the way, Cyprus, you know, we have correlation, but we don't have proof of causation. We can't say for sure that Bitcoin went up because of Cyprus. We know it happened at the same time. I mean, right now we had Russia take a tumble and there was speculation that Bitcoin went up because Russia took a tumble, but then Bitcoin went down down as well. And there wasn't really any proof of that. It was a little bit of the echo chamber that we have in our space where people get so excited where they think like, oh, this is why it happened. But we don't really have proof of that. And I agree with Cody. I mean, yeah, absolutely. When we see the EU collapse, that would be a great time, but we're going to need on-ramps. We're going to need people to know what Bitcoin is and have a mechanism of being able to do that. I remember having these discussions 2 years ago when people argued about on-ramps. They said, we don't need to work with banks. They were angry that companies like Coinbase and then later Circle, they were angry that these companies even existed. They say, oh, this is just the old system. When I first joined this community, people say, hey, we don't need to, suit wearing Wall Street types. And now I'm considered, an outlier, maybe not as far as Cody, but certainly, much more on the anarchist side. So these things change. But we do need on ramps. We do need ways for people to be able to access this technology and understand it and use it. And I think that goes hand in hand with investment and price.
Does it have to be?
So I don't think he's wrong. I don't think he's wrong in the broad sense. Like, obviously, you want people asking for your tech and helping people get into your tech and buying your tech and buying the money. I don't think, take this for example, the architecture of the internet, right? More than a third of it now, Linux-based servers, right? This was just the joy of building free software, free in the sense of open source software that people had. In an ideal scenario, sure, people get paid for doing work in Bitcoin. People need to be attracted to Bitcoin space because it pays you. But we all know that the open source ethos is somewhat divorced from this, compensatory element. We know that it's people trying to build superior code, often people who are politically motivated, ideologically motivated. They're trying to do things which often don't come with that kind of compensatory reward. And in the case of BitAngels and David Johnson, these people are trying to introduce monetization techniques where those techniques aren't warranted or needed. I mean, let's just have an open source ethos in Bitcoin, or at least try to promote that, especially if we're going to try to be the standards-bearing organization with the foundation to bring it all back. Let's let investors come up with unique investment and monetization opportunities and focus on core technology, but do it in an open source way.
Bruce?
Yeah, I mean, I'm cool with a lot of that. I think I don't have a problem with it, like David Johnston and monetization of certain things. I think that just like the internet, there's going to be a lot of models that are going to get crushed by somebody doing it for free. I mean, what we used to have, remember the Ad Weekly or whatever you used to buy at the grocery store for 79 cents. That's how you bought cars. Somebody came along and said, okay, I'm going to invent Craigslist. And then Big Backpage comes along and does what Craigslist does. You're going to have people that, somebody can make a technical solution to do a lot of what BitPay does. BitPay's biggest, advantage right now is that they can convert to fiat, but if that becomes less important, it's easier for somebody to take a technical solution and say, look, they can duplicate everything or almost everything that BitPay does with a piece of code. So yeah, we're going to have that, and there's going to be a separation between models about how useful they are versus David Johnson says everything that can be decentralized will be. I would say everything that can be free will be free. Because all it takes is, some of these things can be programmed in 3 days. All it takes is one smart person to put a little bit of time and effort into it. Right. And as more tools are available, more people are going to design things. And I think that's great. That's a model we've seen on the internet. WordPress is free. And now, a huge, huge number of pages. It used to be just for blogs. Now it's like static pages and everything else can be run on WordPress. And there's tens of thousands of plugins for it. So,
let me make a comment on that. You kind of understand my observation here. We have, Eric Voorhees and friends, they go to Panama City. We had enough with the U.S. regulators. Peace out. You got ISP from you. You don't get to play. We're done. We're going to go ahead and do whatever they want to do. So then we have competition from BitPay saying, no, we're going to do this, and we're the only ones, and we're in the space, man, we're going to do 1%, 2%, 3%. It starts to go up. Then Coinapult goes, you know what? We're going to lock your, you put the money with us, and we're going to lock your Bitcoin to what do you want it to be? You want it to be, rubles? You want it to be silver? You want to do this? Boom. And we're going to do it for much less. I will do it for 1% or whatever. All of a sudden, the free market starts to squash, these opportunities for someone like BitPay, which I don't have a problem with. But, it's free market competition. When I was in New York City almost a year ago, and at the Bitcoin conference there, and I got a meeting with some of the lawyers, Chuckie Schumer's aides there, and people are, I mean, it was very obvious that it was a Department of Financial Services, New York leaning kind of event. And as I had lunch with one of the attorneys, that it was very clear to me that you could see in his eyes, like, you dumb kid, it's already done. I mean, I've been around long enough to know when I was just like being shined on. You don't get it. It's already illegal, for money laundering reasons. We got laws on the books that we can apply. We got big, giant, jackbooted, left jackboot, right jackbooted, jackboot on your throat party people that's going to regulate and explain it to you. And I'm going, really? Okay. I could see the idea. But I go, for you guys to be successful in what you're advocating, to be able to track everything, to be able to, if it's property, you're going to get capital gains that you take because you knew what they took out when you bought it at this exchange before, and then when they spend it on the latte. I remember the representative from the IRS, an attorney, comes on PBS and he says, hey, we're going to make it a property. Yeah, you don't have to worry about that latte thing. A week later, he comes back. You know what? I did not get the memo. Yes, you are. So I'm going, are they going to do it as a capital gains thing? Are they going to? But they have to track it. And I'm going, as I'm looking at him, I'm going, wow, you guys already have this planned out. Yes, they do. So I'm going, all right, so white adoption to me is not dealing with them. It is having a better product. And I'm going, okay, so let's focus on that. Because whatever working with them isn't going to produce what I want. I guarantee that. And it's international. If the United States wants to cut themselves off of the people's currency, fine. I don't care. So I'm looking at this tech being very powerful for a lot of reasons. And I can think of no benefit to give even the time of day to any government, much less the United States government. So I can understand industry wanting to have their interests represented. I can understand that they want to make sure that they're not going to go to jail and they want to interface. But I'm going, that was not my goal. And I'm not willing to advocate and give up the freedom for myself and the future of my children and my grandchildren in order to make some company happy so they can get more wide adoption, which benefits what? If I'm going to be surveilled, I don't care how many people use a surveil me tool, it doesn't make it any better.
Yeah, government has a plan to, at least in some parts of government have a plan to destroy it, sure, but everything government does fails and usually has exactly the opposite effect of what they want to do. They wanted to, reduce terrorism, they increased terrorism, they wanted to have peace in the Middle East, and they made it worse. They want to have,
poverty,
war on drugs, war on, Social Security, whatever. They everything that they do, it happens the opposite of what they intend.
By intent!
So I don't really care if they have a plan to destroy Bitcoin. We're one app away from that totally anonymity. And I'd rather see adoption. I'd like to see a world where we have 50 million wallets in America and hundreds of millions of wallets globally, and we could be the ultimate Trojan horse. We could crush these guys with one app. With maybe Cody's the developer of the app. Maybe it's Dark Wallet. Maybe it's something else that instantly makes it so that everything. Everything is anonymous and they're left the same way, by the way. I mean, if Mubarak would have known what Twitter would have done, he would have made Twitter the death penalty. He would have done anything to stop Twitter. The governments are stupid. I don't worry about these regulators that much. They're fools and they're not the brightest people around. And so I don't worry so much about them having this secret plan. I'd rather do anything we can to get adoption, get this thing, widely used.
Okay, so adoption is your main focus. So, whatever we can to get adoption. I hear this a lot.
If the internet had 100,000 people and only stayed at 100,000 people, it would still be great technology, but it wouldn't have done the change, wouldn't have caused the change that it did, where we've had regimes fall, we've had dictators toppled and everything else because of it. Adoption is key. I want to see tens and tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people around the world using Bitcoin. And then it will be too late. The technology is too superior. They're not going to be able to stop it once it has that broad adoption.
Okay,
once
so
it
we
is
got
broadly
we,
adopted, they can't stop
we
it.
Got we got it down. We got Bruce adoption. That is primary focus. What's your goal, Cody? Is it adoption?
I gotta go in like 2 minutes, guys. I'm on this plane's about to taxi.
Yeah, we're about
out,
done. We're about
so
done.
First of all, Bruce, thank you so much for doing the debate, man. I hope it's
thank you.
I know we were on for a long time, so this is great. But look, man, the power doesn't just have a repressive mode. Okay, there isn't just this one mode of government oppression. All right, there's also this element called subjectification, where we constitute ourselves as sites of political power,
through tying ourselves to an essential identity that, like, that the state categorizes for us. Okay, it's a kind of it's a subjective mode of power. All right, and this is what you allow when you entertain some of these forums and have some of these conversations with, when you allow the state and its conversations to kind of come into your own conversation. So my point is about intentionality, and intentionality should extend to destroying the foundation for what it was, what it represents, and creating something new, just as an expression of an intentional libertarian reorganization. That's all. I mean, offering people a ritual chance to destroy something that has done great damage to their project. And that's really all I want to offer people.
Thanks, Cody. Bruce, let's go ahead and give you, you know, the final word. And
right, I'll see you guys.
Thanks, Cody.
Yep.
Well, I want to thank Cody also, and I'll say that I agree on a lot of these things. The foundation has not represented us in the way it should. I want to change it. I still hold out hope as an optimist that it can be fixed. If it can't, then I'll be right with Cody in wanting to disband it. But for now, I hold out hope that it can be fixed. I think that's the best place to put our energies and efforts right now.
Bruce, thanks for spending so much time with us and articulating your position as well as you have. I just wanted to make sure everybody got the, you know, give their point, because I guarantee there's going to be a lot of people, certainly in the industry, that are very supportive of, you know, what you have to say. And I just, from the beginning, my advocacy has been, I don't care about everybody. I just care about me as an individual. So as long as you guys will come on and answer my questions, we can have a really good civil discussion of opinion that everybody can make up their own minds given enough information. Everybody stay tuned. You know, tomorrow, Andreas Antonopoulos will have plenty to say about it. We'll be sending him the archive of this, and he'll get to give his perspective, which I'm sure we're all interested in. Bruce Fenton, Cody Wilson, candidates for the board of the Bitcoin Foundation. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, man. That went well. We got a lot of information. I think everybody got to express themselves, you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I enjoyed the conversation. Thank you. Don't be a stranger as time goes on and there's more to discuss. But I tell you, it's going to be evidence of, yep, it kind of went more towards they, them, those, or more for me. That's all I care about, you know. So we'll have these discussions in the future, and hopefully you'll participate.
Thanks, man.
Bye-bye.
Have a good one.
You too.
See ya.